the honourable members, you can see the Hot Bus 9 sees us all except me in a better frame of reference, and I should have come here at Hot Bus 8 to the committee room. I'd have missed a lot of insults. But on a serious note, yeah, no, I think that's it. That's it. There'll have to be a hearing. But good morning to all of us. I think we've got a quorum. I'm checking with the committee secretary. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I'm just going to check. No, we do. We have 7. 8.
We don't have a quorum this afternoon.
Okay, right. Oh, it's because we can't have 7.5 people. Okay. I wish we could. It's amazing what Stat South Africa can do. But there we are. So who are we expecting, though, on a serious note? Yeah, but who are we expecting from the committee? Yes. So I'd like to just look at the apologies, members, so that we get a proper Honourable Lyon is sent an apology. Honourable Kwabaza, Honourable. Right. So I will certainly ask our committee secretary, but also the whip, to see if they can get hold of another member to join us in the next hour or so, because we'll be adopting minutes, you see. All right. The agenda is a very simple one there. The briefing by the DTI on the work of the National Small Business Advisory Council. I often think the smaller the small business, the bigger the name. I hope that's a good sign. An overview of the small business sector. And we would really like to welcome the Acting Chief Director, who's Mr. Mojalefa Mohoto. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. That's fine, okay. And ask him to please take us through this. We would not like to interrupt, and it would seem as if we believe that we should be giving you something like about an hour for this. Is that right? Hot Bus 9, 20 to 10 to 20 to 11. Try to take us through this carefully. We don't want a tour. We want a good understanding. All right. And we won't interrupt you, but don't give us acronyms. Please tell us what these names mean. I'm sure you, when you came here to this department, you also didn't know what they were talking about. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. First of all, before I start, I want to make an apology. I've requested by the Deputy Director General, Acting Deputy Director General of the Division Enterprise and Empowerment Division, to make an apology for him. He was supposed to be here with me. Unfortunately, there was some duties that called that he must remain at the office today. As you can see, I'm all alone today. And secondly, before I think I venture, as you can see, the presentation is all about the National Small Business Advisory Council. And also we talk into it as a monitoring tool for small enterprise development strategy. But before I go into that, there was a presentation that we made when we visited the DTI sometime last month. I'm going to go through some few slides that I did in that presentation, because I just want to bring this into context so that we can understand clearly the context into where the Advisory Council features into the whole National Small Business Strategy. The contents of the strategy per se, I'm going to just highlight the purpose of the Enterprise and Empowerment Development Division, where I'm coming from, and the Enterprise Development Business Unit that I'm heading. And also just to briefly, to bring into context, as I said, to talk about evolution of SMME policy since we started this work 1995 and bring to the committee the strategic guidelines, the focus areas that we as the DTI we are focusing upon, and talk about the common strategic areas of the integrated SMME development strategy, and talk about targeted business environment so that I can actually give you a picture in terms of the space where we are operating. Strategic objectives, state of SMME in the economy. There I'm going to talk briefly, quite briefly, about the statistics in terms of the one of our monitoring tools, the annual small business review, where we're looking in terms of the impact or in terms of what we have done with the interventions that we have put in place. There I'm going to touch just briefly. Therefore, from there I'm going to venture into speak about challenges faced by SMME briefly as well, and then venture into the establishment of the National Small Business Act in terms of the enabling legislation that establishes the National Small Business Advisory Council, the focus of the strategy implementation advocacy of the council, and the work of the council itself. Now, in terms of the purpose of the division, quite briefly, we seek to promote broader participation in the economy and provide equitable share for the most disadvantaged communities, and provide a redress in the economy. That's broadly our purpose as a division. Now, translating that into the enterprise development unit where I'm coming from, there our responsibility is for creating an enabling environment conducive for development and growth of SMMEs, including, this is highlighted by the Act, including cooperative enterprises, as well as increase their contribution to the country's GDP, that is growth, economic growth, with focus to employment creation and poverty reduction. That's broadly the statement about the enterprise development unit where I'm coming from. Now, just to highlight to the committee where we're coming from with this work. In 1994 and 1995, after the inauguration of the new government, after the new dispensation, there were presidential conferences in those 2 years where we had SMME deliberations, where we began to realize that most of the leading economies in the world are actually their economies are led by the SMME development, or what you call enterprise development. Now, out of those two conferences, we came up with what we called White Paper on Development and Promotion of SMMEs in South Africa, which was a white paper that was to be called a Policy on SMME Development, and it was adopted in 1995. Now, out of that, we actually enacted an enabling legislation, the National Small Business Act, in 1996. That legislation was to provide for us institutions of support in this work. One of the institutions that we created at the time was called Insika Enterprise Agency. The purpose of the agency was to provide basically the non-financial support to small enterprises. And then we established Kula Enterprise Finance to actually deal with the financial component of the work that we are doing. But over and above, we realized that whilst we're doing this work, we need a monitoring tool. We need a tool that will monitor the impact of our work out there and the impact of the services that are provided by the agencies that we appointed. Then out of that realization, then we appointed the National Small Business Act. But before that, there were the National Small Business Advisory Council. There were a number of monitoring tools before we appointed the council. I've spoken about the annual review on small business, which is running every year. There's also an annual summit, whereby we wrote in all the stakeholders and we talked to the stakeholders about their perception in terms of the differences that we are making on the ground. Now, later on, we established what you call National Manufacturing Advisory Center, which was an agency that was to look into manufacturing specifically to stimulate manufacturing, smaller manufacturers in the country. Then we undertook, after five years of our implementation of this policy, we undertook what we call mid-term strategy review, which was done in the year 2000. And then 5 years later, then we undertook what we call 10-year review in 2004, wherein we are saying, after 10 years of our implementation of the policy, what is it that we need to change? Or what is it in terms of the benchmarking that we have undertaken internationally and nationally? What is it that we need to actually sharpen in the strategy that we have? And then we came with what we call the integrated strategy on the promotion of entrepreneurship and small enterprises. Then we actually came with this component of entrepreneurship because we realized that entrepreneurship promotion was also one of the key elements that needs to be inserted in the strategy, but also the integrative nature of the strategy itself, so that it can integrate. As you can see, I've mentioned a number of agencies, a number of activities, and a number of programs that we are running at the time. But we wanted to bring the element of integrating all these things, because we find that on the ground we are quite fragmented in terms of the support that we are giving. Now, we call everything under the what we call integrated strategy on the promotion of entrepreneurship and small enterprises. Now, the strategy itself is actually hinging upon these three pillars. So whatever the work that we are doing, it's actually focusing on these three pillars, together with the private sector as well. What we're doing, we're increasing the supply for financial and non-financial support services. I've mentioned Mzika at the time that we have established, but currently we have what we call Small Enterprise Development Agency. Out of that integrated element that I've spoken about, we integrated all the agencies that were national and the programs that were provided into one dedicated agency, which is Small Enterprise Development Agency. But we're providing also the financial support through Kula Enterprise. And we also realized that within Kula, there was quite a market gap in terms of providing funding for the micro sector. And therefore, out of that, we established what we call the South African Micro Apex Fund, SAMAF, that will provide fine funding for the micro enterprises. Over and above that, the work that we are doing seeks to create demand for small enterprise products and services. Because as you establish and develop these enterprises, you need to also to establish the market opportunities for them, and so that they can actually sell their products and services. And out of that, we're using two levers. We're using the government procurement system as a lever. Within that, we have actually adopted, together with Cabinet in 2005, targeted 10 products at an initial phase. We actually identified 10 frequently supplied products in government and actually targeted those products to say they will be supplied in government by small enterprises. About 80% of the supply to government will actually go to small enterprises. Whilst we're saying on the private sector side, we're going to use the BEE codes and sector codes as a lever. As you know, the BEE codes have enterprise development element and procurement element, and we're using those as levers in the private sector to make sure that small enterprises access the contracts in the private sector. So so that they can actually access the market. But while we're doing that also, we need to level the playing field and create a conducive environment for small enterprises to thrive out there. Because you can provide all these services, but if you still have regulations that is actually this small enterprises are entangled within, then you still have a problem. So we're actually working very hard. Over the years, we started with the annual review, or what we call regulatory review, in 2006, and we've been running with that program together with the president, where we identify those regulations that seem to be problematic for small business growth and begin to address those bottlenecks in those regulations so that we can actually have this environment that is very conducive for the market to actually operate within. So these, whatever the work that we are doing is actually coined around these three elements of the strategy. Now, the common strategy priority areas for small enterprises is, as I said, is to create a culture of entrepreneurship and collective entrepreneurship. Collective entrepreneurship here, we're talking about people who are forming clusters, people who are forming joint ventures, and people who are forming cooperatives. These are collective entrepreneurs that we are actually seeking to provide services for them. We want to enhance small enterprise survival rate and their sustainability. What we have realized in the monitoring of the work that we are doing through the annual review that we undertake every year is that we still have a very high debt rate on small businesses. Small businesses, I think we say of the five that we established, three are dying. So it's quite a high survival rate in comparison with other countries of a similar nature, that of similar policy that we are driving. So we whatever we are doing, we're trying to actually enhance small enterprises to make sure that they survive. That's why we actually provide, as I present, I'll give you a scenario in terms of the space that we are operating within, so that you can see when I talk about the segmentation of the market, we actually dedicate the services to a particular segment of small enterprises, so that you dedicate your services, if it's small, your services are dedicated to that small component, so that you actually make sure that you maximize your impact in that. Over and above that, we want to improve enterprise competitiveness. We need our enterprises to compete in the global market. As we go and negotiate and interact, we're in the multilateral organization, bilaterals with other countries, creating markets, we need to have competitive enterprises that can actually, as we open global markets for them, they can be able to go and compete out there. Creation of enabling environment for enterprise growth and development of small enterprises and cooperatives. As I said, I've spoken about regulations as well. Create an environment that is very conducive for these enterprises. Also for them, as they comply with whatever requirements of legislation that is out there, your tax legislation, your labor legislation, it helps to be actually be able for them, enable them to actually comply easily. Enhance access to finance, I've spoken about that. Markets and information available to these enterprises. Information element is quite important there. What we normally say is that as you provide information, you don't have to provide a very generic information. It should be packaged in a very proper manner, and also it should provide, as I present you'll see, it should provide what you call trading platform. In some other countries, as you provide information, the information is able to give enterprise to say, if I have to trade with a particular enterprise. If, for instance, I'm a corporate, I have to trade with a BEE enterprise, where do I find these enterprises? So you need to create a trading space in that information that you provide, not a generic, only generic information to say where services can be applied and whatever. So you need to be packaged. You need to have these pockets of information that are very relevant to the needs of SMEs and in terms of the segment of small enterprises. Now, if you go to the provinces, you find that there's quite a number of things that the provinces are doing. that tends to sometimes duplicate what the national is doing. Some of the provinces might even have a strategy that is quite similar with the strategy that we have. And in order to maximize our impact, we have to coordinate these things and harness these things so that they come together. We need to be able to say provinces, the work that they are doing should be actually be implementing areas around the enterprise development, not to duplicate what the national strategy is actually saying, because at the end of the day, we're actually using the resources and not in the right manner. Now, segmentation, I spoke about segmentation of the market according to the enterprise size and the needs, and there's also the sector. You need to talk about the sector as well. As you segment the market, you need to say, within a particular sector, if you say in terms of national industrial policy framework, you have lead sectors. One of the sectors is chemical and the others is automotive. You need to begin to say, within those sectors, what are the activities of the enterprises? What are the opportunities that are emanating for small enterprises within those sectors? And this is what you talk about when you talk about segmentation. I've spoken about the size in terms of the small and medium and whatever. And the needs as well, in terms of the needs to say, in a particular segment, what are the needs that you need to put there? Now, streamlining the institution delivery mechanism for enterprise support is also very much important, because we also have to say, how are our support agencies are working? It need not see CULA working in silos from CEDA. CEDA is supposed to be, as a non-financial, become a feeder to CULA. To say, enterprises that are developed at CEDA site, services provided for non-financial, are able to take the enterprise to CULA to access finance. This is the streamlining that we're talking about. Integration of fragmented programs, are talking about coordination as well, and support services of enterprises. As I said, as you find the fragmentation of agencies, strategies, you also find the fragmentation as well of programs that are happening in the provinces. So our work is also to pull these things together for the benefit of entrepreneurs out there. Now, the space that I was talking about, this is the demarcation, or what we call segmentation. Because you've got to understand the space very clearly in order to provide services, appropriate services. For instance, if you look on the other side, under that column that says driver, you find that enterprises that are small and medium are driven in the main by opportunities. They have identified opportunities and they want actually to take advantage of those opportunities. Now, ours is to say, as they've identified these opportunities, what support do we give to them? In order to give the support to these enterprises in that element, you need to understand their characteristics, their nature of demand, and the demand in terms of non-financial support and financial support resources. If I may take, for instance, the medium sector, you find that we think approximately there we have about 3,000 small enterprises in that area. And they are characterized by the fact that they have about 200 employees with a turnover of 25 million per annum. And they have developed technical expertise and business skills. And I can add as well to say they are bankable. They can access funding through the bank. But what is it that they need from us as government? In the long term, they need equity finance that we need to provide as government. Equity finance that is between 250,000 and above. We need to provide finance in that space. Why we say 250,000 is because the banks don't really or are not willing to play in that space. They feel that there's quite a risk in the space of 250 and below. Now we need to start from there and say, from this area and above, these enterprises are actually bankable and therefore they can actually access funding from this and begin to provide those services for them. On the non-financial support side, we need to look at the conducive environment in terms of regulation. In terms of their compliance, they need not to be entangled within the compliance issues around our regulations. And we need to provide quality control and productivity activities. Through your national, for instance, NPI, National Productivity Institute, we have a number of programs that we are running with them. That seeks to actually make sure that there's the productive capacity in these small and in these enterprises at that level. Of course, the other area is stimulating the franchising sector. This is one of the vehicles, especially for the startup enterprises, that we are trying to stimulate. Now, in terms of financial side, these enterprises need they access corporate finance through corporate banks. But they need private equity and venture capitalists. And as we know, in the country, we still have very few venture capitalists. Venture creation is still very, if you compare with the countries like South Korea, for instance, venture creation in our country is still very, very low. We have to stimulate that area of. Hence, we had, maybe if I may just deviate a bit, we have established what we call Alltex together with the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, where we say we need to create a platform for the medium and small firm enterprises to actually begin to trade within their own platform, not on the main stock exchange, so that we actually stimulate this venture creation that we're talking about. Now, if you look at the extreme then, the micro and survivalist, the driver of people wanting to venture into enterprises within that space is necessity. People who are retrenched, people who are not employed, and in the main, if you look at the survivalist sector, most of those people, as they are called survivalists, if you actually afford them opportunity to get employed tomorrow, they leave that business. That's why we call them survivalists. They are there only to survive, because they are driven by survivalist mode of entering into business. However, we're saying that we can't really throw the baby with the bucket. What we need to do, you need to actually create opportunities for these enterprises to begin to graduate to the level of them begin to compete at a small space and even at a medium sector. So we're providing quite a number of programs that venture specifically to that sector. For instance, this sector, in the main, if you look at the municipality, the metro, they need what we call infrastructure, trading infrastructure, and they don't have that. So we need to provide that. And also the legislation around the in the metros and in the municipalities need to be very much favorable for them to stay in that space so that they can grow. Now, the strategic objectives is promoting development and growth of small enterprises and increase their contribution to GDP. I've spoken about that in the pillar. Facilitating and increasing the access to market opportunities through 10 products. I've spoken about that as well, to say we have targeted these 10 products for small enterprises and also using DE as a lever in the private sector. And improving human resource and capacity. We have what we call in the DTI skills for economy. That section is for a particular purpose, especially in the main for small enterprises. It's actually to enhance the skills capacity in the enterprise, in the small enterprises. And we are working together with that unit to make sure that we actually harness the skills and identify the skills that are shorting within the sector. Raising the levels of export, I've spoken about the market opportunities that we are creating in the platforms where we are engaging in the multilateral organizations and also with bilateral with other countries. Increasing the supply of financial and non-financial support and contributing towards economic empowerment of people living in the peri and rural areas. We need to stimulate enterprise development and entrepreneurship in the peri urban areas and rural areas. And this is what we are doing. That's why when we created CEDA, we said we need CEDA to begin to have these offices open in the most rural areas. For instance, if you go to Kuruma, what you call Khalagari District Municipality, you have an office there. You don't have an entrepreneur from Kuruman traveling to Pretoria, for instance, to make it to register for business. They have to register in that locality. Mm-hmm. So that we actually address the bottlenecks within the rural area. And also we want to stimulate entrepreneurship around women, youth, and people living with disabilities. Now, just a bit on the statistics. As I said, we have this monitoring tool that we call the Annual Review on Small Business. We have the latest report that captures 2005 up to 2007. And that report tells us that since 2004, we have about 27% increase of enterprises entering the market, more formally registered enterprises. And this information is captured in the State SA Integrated Business Register. And it tells us that almost 40,000 new entrants are coming in annually. And the annual review also tells us that approximately we are providing 40%, which is still low in comparison. If you look at the India, if you look at the South Korea, if you look at the Brazil, it's still low, but we're contributing about 40% to the gross domestic product in terms of small enterprise. As I said, if you look at the leading economies and economies that are actually the fastest growing economies in the world, the contribution of their SMEs is quite high. Their economies are driven in the main by SMEs, and a very small percentage is come from the corporates or big businesses. Now, the main contributing sector in this work is construction, services, transport, retail, telecommunication, and financial services. And if you look at the spread of small enterprise representation in the above sectors, you find that the construction and services and retail account for 90% by number of informal sector. As you know, I mean, there's quite a lot of people at the informal sector that are dealing with construction. You pass these people standing around the corners of every street, and they actually have skills and all that around the construction work. But they are not formalized. And formal business concentrated in the business such as services, trade about 44%, and trade about 23%, and manufacturing about 12%. And these sector growth is highly depend on domestic expenditure. As you know now, as you know, we are in the recession, and quite the expenditure around the consumer expenditure is quite low, and it's actually having actually quite a negative impact around these sectors. And I think the review that we're going to undertake, the next review that we're going to undertake, is going to show us exactly that there was a number of during this course of this year of decline in those statistics. Now, challenges. What are the challenges? In the main, the challenges that are facing the small businesses broadly: access to markets to sell their goods and services. Hence, we're talking about looking at these levers in the private and the public sector. Access to service provided under one roof. Now, you need to have what we call one-stop shop, wherein if you enter into CEDA office, for instance, there's what we call CEDA Etegwini. When you enter at CEDA Etegwini, you find that there's cooler office in there. There's summer office in there. There's business, what you call businesses that are operating within the center. So it's a business hub of some sort. You find that there's also a construction incubation center in there. You find that there's a Standard Bank small business, they call it unit, operating in there. Now, small businesses are looking in such a, they are looking for such a kind of an operation. When they enter into CEDA office, they need to say, when they're looking for microfinancing, you need to say, around the corner there's somewhere for you to actually be able to assist you. rather than to say, if we travel 3, 4, 5 streets away, then we're going to find cooler. They don't want that. It's becoming too much problematic for them. So we need to provide what we call one-stop shop. This is what they need. And this is the work that we're striving to do. Access to financial services provided by development finance institutions. Here we say specifically for by development finance institutions. Because during this time of the credit crunch, you find that the banks have actually withheld their credit given to small enterprises. Now, this is where we need to venture in as development finance institutions of government to say, in this space where the banks are actually still shying away because of the credit crunch, how do we actually close that market gap? Now, the challenge that we have currently is that most of our development finance institutions are quite concentrated as wholesale institutions. Legislative compliance, I've spoken about that. Appropriate and affordable business infrastructure, I've spoken about that, especially for the micro and the survival sector, they need that. Well-packaged and appropriate business information with trading platforms. I've spoken about that too. Now, the whole of this work that I've spoken about, bringing the context of Small Business Advisory Council, is that you need a body that will actually venture into monitoring to say, you have created all these things, you are talking about all these platforms, we have all these programs, but are you making it as government? They need to tell us that. They need to monitor our work, and they need to advise the minister accordingly. Now, hence then, I'm going to give you an overview of what this Small Business Advisory Council is all about. Now, the 2003 Small Business Amendment Act provided for the establishment of the council. And in terms of the act says the Minister of Trade and Industry shall facilitate a process aimed at the establishment of an advisory body which seeks to represent and promote the interests of small business as contemplated in the National Small Business Strategy. As I said, their work is actually to make sure that they promote that interest by actually making sure that they monitor exactly what we are doing and advise the minister accordingly. For development and promotion of small business in South Africa, this body is referred to as the National Small Business Advisory Council, NSBAC, in the Integrated Small Business Enterprise Development Strategy, approved by government in 2005. Now, this is the provision, the Act provision. The Act says this is what the body is supposed to look like, and this is what the body is supposed to advise the minister and do in turn on behalf of small business, become a springboard on behalf of small business. Now, in dissecting that provision, we look at the provision and say, what does it say to us? The provision says the minister is afforded the power to appoint the National Small Business Advisory Council. And the minister is also afforded the power to determine the constitution of the council. The constitution of the council is supposed to tell us in terms of how the constitution is constituted, how it's supposed to operate, the advice it's supposed to give, who to interact with, and all that. And determine, the minister, remember the minister is the chair of the council, and therefore you have to determine and convene the council meeting. We're supposed to, in terms of the current legislation, supposed to happen only 4 times in a year. Now, as we dissect this thing further, the constitution of the council provides for the composition of the council itself. Now, the composition of the council talks to the expertise, looking for the people with academic background, those people who can do the research, people with policy analyst skills who can do the analysis. We're looking for people who actually have ventured into business before, so that who understand on the ground exactly what is happening on the ground. We're looking for people who actually have been training around this space, who understand the skills shortage around it. So that adverse nature of composition of the council, this is what we're looking at. And in the previous council that we had, that actually completed its term, we had that such a composition in terms of what I've just mentioned. Now, it also has to determine the quorum of the meetings of the council. That is the standard procedure. It has to provide for the procedure for the functioning of the council, how the council is supposed to function, and also interaction with parliament, how the council is supposed to interact with parliament, with the department, and with the statutory bodies. So that constitution that's supposed to be determined by the minister is supposed to do that. And I must say we have actually tried, which is quite an anomaly, because the last council came in, there was no constitution. So we had to spend a lot of time working with them, trying to come up with this constitution that we're talking about, that we call guidelines in terms of how they're supposed to work. Now, in terms of the activities, the council is supposed to advise the minister on these areas. Strategies to address the identified market failures affecting the sector. As I said, you have the policy analysts here, you have people who are researchers. They are able to determine exactly on the ground what is happening. Identified for us, they are the market failures in terms of what we are providing as the services, and advise the minister accordingly. And advise also on the national standard pertaining to small business development and regulation. They need to tell us that the standards that are applicable, either in the national, in the provincial, and at a local level, are they applicable? Are they actually supposed to be as they are in terms of what we are providing for small enterprises? Now, they need also to tell us in terms of the negative or even the positive of the impact of the current and new legislation on the small business. They need to go out there and tell us to say, this type of legislation is not actually conducive for the growth of the sector, and advise the minister accordingly, and also give even suggestions in terms of how to deal with the remedy around it. Measures to ensure the creation of physical business infrastructure through viable business sites. Now, the council has to also to say, in a particular area or in these areas, or in all these areas in the country, the infrastructure is not conducive for small enterprises, or we need to provide more infrastructure for the small business to operate in the space. For instance, one of the things as I go and present, go down with the presentation, one of the things that we identified together with the council was that there used to be these factories, for instance, if you go to Mafeking, there used to be these factories during the time of prior 1994. These factories that were operating in these former Bantustan, if you call it that way, and former rural areas, those rural areas, and what you call border industries. And you find that those buildings are actually left there as white elephants. They are not really operating. They are sitting there and nobody is operating. Whilst you have small businesses looking for the space to operate in terms of the infrastructure. And this is one area that we actually want to look at in terms of the infrastructure. And I must say the Deputy Minister as well, Ms. Ntuli, also did visit the provinces. And what was exciting is that this is one of the areas that she picked up as well to say, what is it that we are doing with the infrastructure that is lying idle in the province? Now, the development of skills in all aspects of running a business, they need to tell us in terms of the shortages of these skills, give us an analysis around it. Steps to be taken to create access for small business to value chain, to say, as we develop small enterprises into the value chains, what are the things that we need to provide in terms of the services? Methods to liaise the small business community, methods to monitor and influence the provision of support services to the small business sector. In their work, the council is supposed to also look in terms of the agencies. What is it that the agencies are doing on the ground? Are they making an impact in terms of providing the services? Are they providing appropriate services? And they need to come and tell us whether that's what is happening. And they can actually also advise the minister on any other matter that he deems appropriate that the council needs to advise him on. focusing on the strategy implementation advocacy, you find that the National Small Business Advisory Council is an advocacy body. It's supposed to go out there and say and talk about the good or even the bad work that government is doing around small businesses. Advocate this because, as I said, it's a springboard for small enterprises. It actually represents in the interest of small business. So it's supposed to advocate whatever we are doing in government, out there in business and on the ground to the small businesses themselves, and monitor the impact of small business in the economy. Are we making an impact using the tools that I've spoken about, the annual review, the annual summit? Monitoring the impact and effectiveness of the existing institutions, as I said, and the program for small businesses. They need to venture. They need to be a sort of an eagle eye to look down on the ground to say, these institutions, are they really providing appropriate services? And provide what you call proactive ministerial advice, wherein they actually sometimes, as a researcher, for instance, some of them are professors or even those that we're going to appoint, you find that one is a professor is doing some research in particular institution. Proactively, as they actually unearth some of the things they need to tell us or advise the minister accordingly. But also responsive to the ministerial request. If the minister requests something on the council, they need to tell the minister about what is happening. Now, by nature of its establishment and the context of its work, the role of Small Business Advisory Council requires interaction with other government departments. And now, this is one area that we find it very difficult. That the recognition of the council is still a very sticky issue, because the council is supposed to enter, for instance, within the economic cluster, we have a number of economic departments. They need to enter each and every department if they seek information solely in order to be able to do their work. But this is why we find that it has been a difficult... Some of the departments are treating this as part of the agency of the department, which is not supposed to be. As I present you here, that I'm talking about the autonomy of this council. Small Business Advisory Council to be recognized as a body of experts providing an independent view of how government as a whole responds to small business development challenge. This is what I'm talking about. This body needs to be autonomous. It's an autonomous in a sense that it's advising the Minister of Trade and Industry, but it's actually talking about economic around enterprises, and therefore every economic activity that is happening somewhere outside the TTI, they need to be able to enter that space and begin to actually unearth information there and provide the appropriate advice to the minister. So this structure needs to be autonomous, as I said. Now, quite briefly here, this is just an administrative issue in terms of the secretariat function that they're supposed to go to the council. The secretarial function is provided by the DTI. The unit that I'm heading is actually acting as a secretariat, and then we have an official that is actually managing the affairs of the council. Now, what we need to do as a secretariat of the council, we need to assist the council with effective and efficient administration support, manage and control the SNDC budget, NSDAC budget, coordinate communication to the minister. And on that budget, as you hear as I present, the council have raised some issues around that, because it's also a thorny issue, because it's actually the independence of the council is also there's some implication there. However, we did that on purpose, because the National Small Business Council that we had with the National Small Business Act of 1996, there were some challenges there that arose because of the council managing the budget. So we wanted to bring that function to the DTI so that it can be controlled properly. Providing the council with relevant information from department and other government departments, provide issues or concerns raised by small business for the prioritize issues and concerns raised by small business for the attention of the National Small Business Council. So as we do our work, as a unit and as a department, we need to highlight certain issues that arise that we feel that they are of the attention of the National Small Business Council. Managing the implementation of the existing and new assignments commissioned by the council and compilation of directive of previous studies. So we need to compile this information and manage the information for the council, and also look at the assignments that they have actually commissioned. Remember, the council is an ad hoc structure. It's not actually a full-time operation agency within DTI, and therefore the secretariat should actually be do the actual work in terms of dealing with certain operationalizing, if I may put it that way. Fostering partnership with relevant bodies in small business sector and publicizing and maintaining a positive and professional image of the council. And this is what we do. Now, one would ask, what is it that, if you said the council is a springboard for small enterprises, what is it that distinguishes this council and other business bodies? You have what you call business, small business forums. You have what you call the chamber movement, your chamsas. You have all these things. What makes this one different from that, all of that? Now, here we're talking about the council is independent and formulating the advice it gives to the minister and is therefore an objective advice body, advisory body, in comparison to the others. The council possesses specialized small business skills and expertise. So whilst you have the other forums that are dealing with a whole of other activities around SMEs or representing small businesses, even within the chamber, we have a very focused council that looks in terms of exactly what is happening around the small enterprises. It's a very focused with the skills, necessary skills and expertise around the sector. Now, as I mentioned, members of the council are selected on the basis of their contribution and knowledge of small business sector and technical expertise in the areas related to the sector. The council has ongoing engagement in small business issues. So their work is more focused on small businesses. So they are doing nothing more than focusing on small business issues. The council has or can establish linkages with other players that can add value to small business development and monitoring the effectiveness of support programs. This is the council, what the council can do. The council fills the void between existing bodies and the minister. Remember, if you have the chambers, if you have the business forums, the small business forums, if you have all those things, they don't have this consistent interaction with the minister, whereas the council has. Then the council can serve as a buffer between these other forums to the minister. So it actually interacts with these forums to can actually provide appropriate advice to the minister. Now, coming to the last slide that talk about the last council, basically. The last council that ended its term in July of this year provided us with a report, and there are a whole lot of other things that we're talking about. And first and foremost, let me say, for the past 3 years, a number of quite a huge work of the council, as I said, went to the establishment. We had nothing when we established the act, the council. We only have a piece of legislation. And we brought in the council, and there was such a lot of work to do in terms of making sure that operations and systems are in place. And they spend a greater part of their work consulting the stakeholders, putting together what we call the guidelines in terms of how they're supposed to operate, and going and benchmarking in terms of what is happening in terms of small business operations and vis-a-vis the space that we are operating upon, and also the international space around the small business. So quite a lot of work went in terms of interacting, but we are very glad that they managed out of that stretch work that they had, because there were no systems in place. They managed to give us a report. And in that report, key of the elements that they are highlighting. They are highlighting these. They are saying we need to measure the value of annual small business summit. We're having this summit. We're having this in business that we have every year. But the council says, let's measure the value of these. What are they saying to us as a council and as a department? Because these are very important platforms wherein you begin to get, for instance, in the summit, you're getting all these stakeholders put around in the same one, under one roof, engaging with you in terms of what they believe is happening on the ground and what the impact that we are doing as a department. At the same time, you go through the in-business where you get the enterprises themselves telling you in terms of what's happening on the ground. Now, we need to measure the value of these things to say, what are they telling us? Because they're providing quite a very important information that we have. So, in essence, the council is saying these two areas need to be used as effective tools for the next council to look at. In terms of the work that they're supposed to be doing. Now, they are raising the issue that I'm talking about, improving the functionality and independence of the National Small Business Council and meeting its budgetary requirements in order to fit in the function properly. The independence is still an issue because out there the perception is that the council is one of the agents of the DTI, and therefore you find the recognition in other departments still a challenge. Mostly because we are also controlling their affairs and all that. And they feel that we need to re-look into that space and say, in order for this council to be effective, we need to look at that autonomy and also to look in terms of the independent nature of the council. So when we institute the coming council, the incoming one, we have to actually to re-look into this. And also maybe even strengthen the guidelines. So that we can actually address those issues that they are addressing. Now, the other area that they are talking about is the emergence of multiple small business organizations and the lack of integration. Cooperation and strong voice remains a problem. Now, this, as they tell us, is that, you see, once the provinces or once the local municipalities believe that you are not making an inroad in terms of the service that you are providing, they will find a way of coming up with a solution. And what we've been finding is that the solution is to come up with the agency in that locality that will provide the services. Now, these things are emerging in a number of localities, and we need to begin to understand and realize why are these things happening. Because we're talking about integration of our programs, integration of our systems and programs. Now, why do we have, for instance, Limpopo saying, no, we're going to establish what we call LIPSA, Limpopo Economic Development Agency, whatever you call it, when we have SIDA operating in that space? We've got to ask ourselves those questions. Now, they say also there's still a need in terms of the services that we're providing for further relief and exposure for small businesses around the issues of VAT, for instance. The compliance issues are still there. The tax system, they are raising an issue to say the tax system is still not favorable for small business. We still have to relook. We understand that SARS has done a lot of work, but we still have to relook in terms of the tax system. The grants and aid that are provided by the DTI, for instance, the unit that is called the Enterprise Organization providing the grants, are they appropriate? Are they actually reaching the appropriate enterprises that we are actually seeking to provide services into? And we still have to look into other models outside our country to say, what is it that we can learn? For instance, one issue that they are raising there quite strongly is that there are these number of countries, and it's beginning to happen in Africa as well, that they are establishing what we call the small business bank. Why don't we have the small business bank in the country? They are raising that issue. Let's benchmark and see, is this country different from, for instance, some of the countries like in Asia that have established those banks? Is it different from Ghana that has established that bank? We need to relook into that. so that we can actually harness the work of the DTI around enterprise development. Mobile services by the DTI agencies to the most rural areas. There are remote areas that are not reachable. That they feel that we need to provide mobile services in that. And I must say, we are doing some kind of work with CEDA around that to make sure that we have mobile units that are going to the rural, most remote areas to provide these services. Simplification of procurement procedures is still an issue that the council is raising. Around that, for instance, the tax issues around the tax clearance certificates, you find that there are a number of enterprises that miss a lot in terms of opportunities, accessing opportunities because of a compliance nature. They have to go to SARS, look for the tax certificate. When are they getting that is another issue in terms of the turnaround time at SARS as well. And if you don't have that tax certificate, but you have expertise, can't you access that? For instance, you have in the universities what you call entrepreneurship centers that are providing the services. The entrepreneurship centers, you find that they are not actually businesses, but they say they can provide services. And when they actually bid for some other services that they can provide in government, they are required to provide tax clearance certificates. So we need to look into these compliance areas and begin to see what work we can do. And the tender forms that are quite complicated, especially for those enterprises that are at a very lower level. We need to look into that. So this is just a compression of the report that we got from the council. They're talking about a whole number of things. They talk about a lot of information, but in compressing that succinctly to say what is it that has got the we can take it home as the DTI. They are talking about these things that we can actually deal with. I must say, we actually put our heads together as a DTI to actually begin to respond to these things. Now, just to highlight, as I said, the council that we instituted 3 years ago has finished its work in July, and we are in the process of instituting another council, appointing another council, and we are hoping that as we work together, we are going to have an opportunity once they are appointed, or even during the process of appointing, to have an opportunity to interact with the committee to get advice in terms of the appointment element. But as we have appointed them, we are going to have an opportunity for them to actually come before this committee to say what is it that they visualize doing around these issues that I've raised, that the council is supposed to be, and the council is supposed to provide services for the council. So, Chair, I think this is briefly what I've packaged for this committee in terms of this presentation today. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you very much, Chief Director. I think, members, what we'll do at this point is to raise our questions. We're just monitoring the issue of tea per se, asking maybe someone at the table here to see that we can have tea in the next 10 minutes. I don't know if there's someone around. Okay. Meanwhile, what we think we can do is to ask questions, and then having asked the questions, seeing as you're on your own as well, give you a chance to have some tea and have a break, and then after tea to respond. So you would then take down the questions at this particular point. So what we have the following members here. We have the Honourable Ntuli, Honourable Maria, Honourable van der Westhuizen, Honourable Mabaso, and Honourable Mabenya, in that order.
Yeah, thanks, Chaplain. I certainly would like to thank the department for the comprehensive
presentation.
You know, Chaplain, I'm getting worried with the department entities. You find that the report is good, and as the chief director is saying, we're supposed to do this, we'll do this, we'll do that. Seemingly, most of the things you'll find that they are there on paper, theoretically. But when you go to the ground, when you are looking for tangible things, and it becomes a problem. I don't know how are we going to overcome this problem, particularly when we are saying we'd like to create the conducive environment for creating employment and jobs. Chaplain, if the chief director can tell us what are the community outreach program for this council in the community? When do you advertise? When do they advertise that they're there, they exist, they provide? What are their competencies? Because you find that I'm from Etegwini, Durban, where he says there is a unit, but I've never heard of it. And I've got a constituent office there. How do they operate? You find that it's there somewhere, and but you are from there, and you have never heard of it. I don't know what is the problem, but Chairperson, maybe if you can take us whether they've got any community outreach program. Secondly, we've got LED at municipality level, but you don't find the link with this council and this LED, because I believe there is a mayor's office there in the metro, like Etegwini, but you won't be able to find how do they interlink with this council. And lastly, Chair, we know that there was a council which has finished its term, and there's a new one. When is it going to be this new one? Maybe is it in the pipeline? For how long? We have heard that it ended in July, and we don't find out the time frames. When is the new council is going to be appointed? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ntuli. The next one I think we have is Honourable Maria.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Just three things that I've picked up, that some of the observation that I want is the Chief Director's response to. The first one is, he has talked about the need for a small business bank. I don't know what the purpose of that is, because if it's for deposits, there's enough banks for deposits. There's also so many institutions within DTI that is already lending money out, doing loans and finances. Why do we need another one? And then we've got the Small Business Development Corporation, which is known these days as Business Partners, which is supposed to focus on small businesses. So why do we need another structure? And in my opinion, it's just going to add more cost and not really going to serve the objective. Then in terms of the target segmenting the markets, that one slide you've shown us, what is of concern to me is that we have picked up the difference between the preferential procurement policy requirement and that of the BBBEE charters. Now here we've got another one, which is also different. Now what is strange to me is that within DTI, knowing all these concerns, that here we've got another structure. So another form of a definition of a small business. of a medium enterprise, of a medium business, and a big, you know, that it seems to be like one hand is not talking to the other hand, or they're not knowing what the other one is doing. And most certainly, these things should be aligned with each other. Then, Madam Chair, the other point that I pick up, and which is of a huge concern to me, and the best one that shows me that is probably a problem, and that is within the three strategic pillars, and that is skills and knowledge. Per implication, you have mentioned skills and knowledge, but I can assure you, you can spend billions of rand, and you can make available billions of rand. But if there's not skills and knowledge of doing business, specifically financial management, then it's no wonder that three out of every five is collapsing. In fact, that will increase with difficult economic times. That should be a strategic objective. How to increase or improve the skills and the knowledge of doing business, of doing financial management, of making those decisions. And that should be an explicit strategic objective. That is real empowerment. The other seems to be I've also got a belief that when business has got skills and knowledge, they will indicate to you what kind of support do they need. Currently, you are designing a model where you offering services and support to businesses, but not really knowing what they really need. Because you don't train them, you don't educate them, you don't uplift them, you don't empower them to make a business decision. That is a huge concern of mine. Without that, all the money will be wasted, in my opinion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
No, that's fine. I'm just concerned there, the Acting Chief Director, are you able to get all these points? Good. If you're on your own, you see, that's my concern. Honourable Member Vestes?
You can see what a sympathetic person
we have. Well, somebody must counteract it then. can I just say, sir, did I understand you correctly? This existing council existed now, or the outgoing one, previous one, existed for its term of 3 years, so it must have met for at least 12 times. Four times a year in terms of legislation? More than that, good. Now, can you tell me what has been the budget of this council for the past 3 years? And can you tell me what impact this council has had? You say it was consulting and it was busy with benchmarking activities. What benchmarks have been set? Because in all honesty, Chairperson, it seems to me as if they've spent all the money and all the energy drawing up a constitution, you know, looking after themselves, fighting for turf, looking for recognition. And I honestly want to say my impression is you earn recognition. You don't complain about not being recognized. And I don't see that in this presentation where they've had any impact on any small business sector. So please, sir, if you can show us, otherwise I'm going to have to leave this meeting today to say that taxpayers' money has been wasted on this council. Thank you.
Honourable Member Vestes, and just in a light-hearted moment, the one thing they didn't do for themselves is market themselves on TV so we could see who they are. But, sorry, Honourable Lavinia. Honourable Lavinia.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much to the Acting Chief Director for this very informative presentation. My question, Chairperson, is linked to when he was making the presentation, he alluded to the fact that amongst the many powers that the minister has, he also is the chairperson of this council. That is where my concern starts. He says the minister chairs the council. And then on the next page, he says the council must advise the minister. Then on the next page, he says a small business advisory council should be recognized as a body of experts providing an independent, you underline independent, view on how government, you underline government, as a whole responds. Then he also mentions autonomy, which means the council has to be autonomous. That is the next page. I hope he is getting that. Then the next page, it is said the secretariat are officials of the DTI. You underline secretariat and officials of the DTI. On that same page, there is a bullet number 3 where it alludes to the officials coordinating communication to the minister. And then the next page, it says council is independent. You underline independent. In formulating the advice, it gives to the minister. Advice and minister. And then the next page, Chairperson, on bullet number 2, under recommendations, improving the functionality stroke independence of the council. Now my concern is that how is it possible for this council to be independent if it is chaired by the minister who is government himself? Like, to me, this is very confusing. That is what I would like to understand. And if the officials are also part of this, because if they provide secretariat services, and I don't understand, Chairperson, I think it's me who has got a problem. If the minister is the chairperson, it means...
I'll tell you just that on where it says he's the chair. I'll tell you why, because I...
Under the powers.
We've got
two presentations, so I don't know which one you've got. I've got the black and white one.
Yeah.
So that one is on page 12, under minister's powers. He alluded to the fact that when he was... here the powers that I mentioned are 3. But under determining and convening the council meeting, he also said the minister chairs this council.
Oh, I know what. Sorry,
you understand that?
It's not printed here, but it was...
Yeah, but he mentioned what when he said he determines and convenes meetings.
Yes.
So, Chairperson, my concern really here is that, according to my understanding and where I come from, if a person chairs a particular structure, it means that person is part and parcel of that structure. So to me, it is very confusing that the same structure advises the minister. You know, it is very, very confusing that does he advise himself? What happens? It is very confusing, Chairperson. That is the main concern that I have around this whole issue. Thank you.
No, I think we take your point, and I hope that that's quite clear. So when you're coming back, acting your chief director, you'll be able to respond to that. I haven't forgotten Honourable Mabaso. It was just as a matter of convenience we came to the side now.
Thanks, Colleague Chair. My first point is to say SABS, how is it utilized as a tool of the people? And then the second one is, as you interact with us, what would you like us to contribute in the objectives of the department? You know, is there, when you look at us, when you listen to us, we want to hear what you want to what you advise us to contribute further, you know, in addition to what we are contributing. And then when I interacted with cooperatives in KZN,
most of them said they don't have infrastructure support. Although I know that the infrastructure support, you look at it in one angle, but my additional angle will be where I will take it that water, electricity, roads, you know, I want to look at that as another infrastructure support. And then when we look at on page, the very first, is it the very first slide, the one with these three pictures. This one? That one, yes. The third, the fourth bullet there says creation of enabling environment. So, to what degree has that environment been created for cooperatives? And my last two questions are... Is it not possible to utilize universities and technical, the students that are doing business, is it not possible to utilize them as support mechanisms to small business as part of their training, you know, just so that we reduce classroom training, or we mix it with a practical work? And then the last one will then be on the trading, because most of these, as you have alluded, the weakness is on marketing and on where to sell goods. To what degree is assistance going in that direction, you know, practically speaking? Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabaso. I just have one myself, about several actually, one broader one. I'm going to deal with just about the last slide. Before you said thank you, you indicated the council itself went round doing its favourite thing, chatting to the people, I understand. It came back with a lot of recommendations. Certainly it seems that one of its, you know, you said your independence, let's get more power. Now, critical issue is power to get what? I don't know if we want to give them more independence to go on talking. So let's leave this independence out of it for the moment. Now, then they want the independence to set up a whole lot of small business organizations, or do they want us to address that? I think your point was they wanted us to fill the void. Why is it that they've been there, but actually others don't think they've done anything, so they've actually established their own little organization? I think that's, and that spells it out. I think a lot of the members feel that exactly what did they do then? The other thing is about the, they list a number of things here which are very clear. What I would have thought would have been more helpful is not simply to say there's so many other people now who've established these organizations because we didn't do the work. Couldn't they have listed the work they should be doing? You know, like this, we've got 20 new organizations here doing this. What are these organizations doing then? Because clearly they're doing what wasn't done. So could we have that be quite useful for us if we had a list of these multiple other organizations so we didn't have to do our own research, and then we could ask them ourselves, you know, what are you doing that we didn't do? The other point, though, is this. You know, you link this whole thing about independence to the budget. I do hear what you're saying. If I'm controlling your budget, you feel as if you're not that independent, course, the judiciary gets its money from the same pool. Parliament does. We all do. I don't think it's purely a budgetary problem. And they may, and there are lots of departments that have autonomy and manage to do a lot more work, or that don't even have any independence, are part of government and do the work. So are they now saying it's because we didn't have a, we didn't hold the purse strings, we didn't sign the check, that that's why we couldn't do our job? I think that's a very poor excuse. How many households would be running if every wife felt like that? Please. No, absolute nonsense. Now, can you have some tea, I think, so that when you come back now, you'll be able to respond to us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will start with the first question from Honorable Ntuli, wherein he is saying most of the things that we are doing or that we are actually putting on the paper are not really translating on the ground. And also he highlights the community outreach, which is a specific question that he says, what is the council doing around that? Now, in my presentation, I also alluded to the fact that the council did what we call stakeholder consultation, wherein they were going through a number of provinces. They covered almost all the provinces. Perhaps you saw it goes to your comment to say maybe they're not appearing on the TV so that they can be seen what they are doing. But they went to a number of provinces wherein they were actually meeting with a number of particular stakeholders, including the small businesses themselves. Because part of their work basically is to harness and get that information from those stakeholders and small businesses. Those, in terms of analysis that they have to do, they can't analyze the information unless they meet with the people that are raising the concerns that are happening on the ground. So they've got to, in order to actually unearth what is happening on the ground, they've got to talk to the people who are actually feeling the pinch. And this is what they did. The report, some of the issues that are raised, I'm raising as issues that they actually raised with the minister, they emanate from the meetings that they had in the provinces. But I'm not sure then in terms of community outreach, because that the community outreach is not necessarily the consultation. But the community outreach is done by other agencies, not the council per se. CEDA and KULA, and other agencies of the department, we having something that we developed with the former deputy minister, what we call taking DTI to the people, where we move with the DTI to the most, with the minister or deputy minister to the most remote areas of the country. Take DTI there so that we can explain to people exactly what the DTI does in terms of the services that we are providing. So that program is not per se sitting in the council, but it's housed somewhere, but it's happening. It's an issue that is happening. Now, in terms of the LED at the municipalities, the linkage with the work that we are doing, we understand that the LED, for instance, in the municipalities is broader than the small businesses. But the small business or enterprise development is a component of the LED activities in the municipalities. Now, what we did last year, we actually mooted a coordination system that we actually presented to the MINMEC, and it was approved by MINMEC, because we said if we have to provide effective services in the provinces and in the municipalities, we need to understand exactly who does what. And in doing so, then we need to have a forum where we meet and understand exactly what the other hand is doing. And we have what you call the provincial coordination committee structure, wherein we have these feeders in the provinces that have the LED forum as well. So we're working together with the municipalities around the LED forum, mostly because within the DTI itself, we have an LED unit. An LED unit that actually deals with the strategies around the economic activities around LED. Not LED, but they provide a framework wherein the LED within the economic activities should operate. For instance, it falls under what you call regional development strategy of the DTR. LED falls under that. In terms of when is the new council going to be instituted, I cannot say exactly in terms of the date, because the processes are underway, but the sign-off by the minister is actually going to tell us in terms of when. But the process in terms of going to the minister for sign-off, because remember, when you appoint the council, you it's not only forwarding the minister for the minister to sign off on the names, but it has to be, he has to also to converse his opinion on the names that we're providing to him. So basically, the process is underway, but we're actually targeting, in terms of our operations as a unit, we're targeting November to make sure that in November we have the council, the new council in place. That's our target, but then that target will be informed by the minister's schedule. Now, in terms of the question from Honorable Mare, need for small business bank, this is just a suggestion, and this suggestion was actually not only mooted by the council, but even us as DTI, we did at some point converse this view, that given the fact that we have realized that we have a fragmented structure within the non-financial component of our support, and we integrated these into one, what is it that is stopping us from integrating all the pockets of funding that are happening elsewhere into one body that we can call the small business bank? That has been the argument that we actually put forward. Not necessarily to taking IDC in total, not necessarily to take NEF in total, but there are components within IDC that deal with small business. For instance, the risk capital facility that is happening in IDC. And then you have the cooler. And then you have also some of the programs that are run by NEF that are enterprise development related. And also your TO incentive scheme and whatever. We said, why can't you put these things under the umbrella of Small Business Act? Because some of the countries, this is what they're doing. So the council was just saying, based on our argument and based on what they have seen in terms of their bank's benchmarking operations, they believe that it's something, not necessarily that we need to have, but it's something that we need to investigate very thoroughly to see if, as I said, if Ghana said they want a small business bank in Africa and they have it, and if the Asian countries like Taiwan have the small business bank, why can't we have it? So they said, let's actually generate this further. As I said, we did meet this earlier, and then we did engage in National Treasury at some point. And I think they did raise some concerns around the Small Business Bank, but it's something that we have to investigate further anyway. And then segmenting the market, you spoke about the definition, the definitional alignment, and you spoke about the triple PSA and the BEE charter, and then you're saying we are raising that here. The definition has been the issue. Hence, even in our work, we are reviewing the definition of small business currently. Because if we look at even at the codes of good practice that are run by our BEE unit, the definition around the 35 million was actually investigated and not aligned with Small Business Act, because at the time the schedule that we had was quite old. Because the schedule that we had on small business definition dates up to 1996, when we enacted the Small Business Act. So that schedule is old, and what is it defined there in that schedule? We can't say currently it's what is happening. For instance, if you say the turnover at that time for a small business was 100,000, it can't be 100,000 today. So we have an issue about the definition. But the definition, in terms of the definition that we, the review that we are doing, we actually going to address all these things because we're going to feed even to the BE feed into the preferential procurement legislation as well. And let me just highlight that why is the definition being a problem is that even when we started with the targeted procurement around the 10 products, one thing that National Treasury asked us is that these targeted enterprises that we are targeting for procurement, define them for us. And it became a problem. Then it says to us, then we need to review what is in the legislation. Hence, we're actually working. We have a report in the office, and we're going to have a roundtable meeting fairly soon with the experts that are going to look into that report and tighten up those recommendations going forward to the new definition of small business. Now, in terms of the skills and knowledge, in terms of the pillars, as they were mentioned, they are not really captured in the pillars per se, but they are embedded within the non-financial component. Hence, as I was presenting the focus areas, I think there's an area there where I spoke about the skills here, strategic objectives. Where I spoke improving human resource and capacity and management and technical skills in the SMME. I spoke about that because that's a very strong issue that we're actually driving as well. And CEDA is actually managing that. And CEDA has just established what they call CEDA College. Wherein they're actually dealing with that, because it's very much important for not only the skills for SMEs, but even the skills of people who are providing these services within the CEDA offices. So we have that college that is going to deal with that. And you say it should be explicit. Perhaps we're going to take that as a suggestion to actually highlight it as an explicit thing.
Just a minute, where's this college when was it established?
It was basically launched.
It was launched a month ago. It was based in Pretoria.
Just as well we had this meeting now, not last
month. It's based in Pretoria. It was launched by CEDA as a program just a month ago. It's basically, as I said, it's an internal issue, as I said, to just deal with the anomaly that is arising in terms of providing the skills, even by the officials in the CEDA offices, so that you actually tighten the skills. Because as you know, the business development service skills is very lacking in the country. That we know because we have opened these offices and we are very much aware that people that we have brought in those offices, they need particular skills that we actually have to tighten up in order to provide quality service. So that was mooted because of that component. In terms of what the benchmarks did they made, or the impact of the benchmarks, and I think it addresses a number of questions where the question of impact is raised. The impact of the council is that it doesn't come from the council itself. It translates into DTI actioning their advice. Remember, the work of the council is to analyze, get information, analyze, and provide the advice to the minister. Now, once that the minister then actions that advice, then it actually translates itself into impact. When I was talking about those things that the council have raised, there are a number of things that we are doing. haven't realized what they said. For instance, I'll pick one. The integration of programs and SMME or small enterprise activities in the provinces into one. It's something that we're working on together with CEDA, because what we said and what MINMEC said to us is that quite clearly that if you still don't have a one-stop shop, as I alluded to, wherein SMEs are getting services under one roof, you still have a problem. You're going to still have a problem. So integrating these programs into one and making sure that they are supplied within one locality is one of the things that we are doing, having realized what the country. Some of the things, of course, is an ongoing thing that we're going to actually deal with. For instance, if the issue around annual small business summit, analyzing succinctly what is coming out of the summit and making sure that it becomes a very positive feeder to the policy development or strategy development, is something that we're going to do going forward. But just to sum up, the impact of the council would not come from the council per se. It will come from us translating what the council is advising for. Of course, advice we can take advice, and some of the advice we can't take. We can take others, but some we can't take. Some we can say, well, yeah, it's an advice, but in terms of, for instance, the cost factors, or in terms of looking at the current economic scenario, is something that we cannot entertain. We know for a fact that out of the experience, some of the things that we mooted 6-7 years ago, for instance, the targeted procurement, is something that we translated only now, after 5 years or 6 years or so. Why is the minister sharing the council, and why are we keep on talking about the independence of the council when the minister is chairing the council, when the officials are controlling the secretarial function, communication to the country, the minister, and all of that? This is one, in fact, I'm glad you picked up. This is one of the anomalies that we realized immediately on the very first meeting of the minister, with the minister with the council, to say, there's an anomaly here. The minister is chairing the council, but the council is supposed to advise the minister. Now, the minister by itself is a body. It's actually encapsulated within the body of the council. Now, who is advising who here? It's an anomaly that we actually realize. And out of that, because it actually sought us to say, we have to review the legislation, we have to amend the act, take out the minister as the chair of the council. But out of that, in terms of making things practical, what we did, we appointed what we call a convener of the council. Somebody who will convene and sit in the council and deliberate on the issue, especially because during the establishment phase, the council didn't meet only 4 times. They met more than four times because there were a number of systems that needed to be put in place. And the minister was not going to be in every meeting that the council is sitting on. And therefore, we appointed, within the council, in our deliberations, together with the council, we felt there's a need for somebody who will act as a convener and convene the council and deliberate with the council and then give an advice to the minister. It's not a legislated provision, but it was something that was to address the anomaly that we identified at the time. Now, going forward, what we need to do is to re-look at the legislation and see if it's something that we can actually deal with amendment of, which is quite the amendment, as you know, is quite a protracted process to take along. By the time you complete that legislation, won't have even the current council that we are trying to complete. It's quite a protracted, hence we thought at the time what was actually practicable was to appoint one of the council members to become a convener of the council in order to deal with that anomaly. But we actually have picked it up. It, in our minds, it's clearly there that the minister, if he has to be advised properly, it's very difficult for him to and then to become this body, the chair and the body of this system. Now, the question around the SABS, how is it being utilized for the small enterprises? I spoke about competitiveness in one of the slides. I said one of the things that we need to see is that our SMMEs become, or small enterprises become, competitive so that they can actually, I can't see the slide now. They become competitive so that they can take advantage of the global market. And I said, we're engaging with multilateral institutions, your WTO, European Union, and all of them. We're interacting with them, we engage with them, and out of our engagement, we see there are markets for enterprises and also small enterprises emerging, and also even bilateral countries. Now, you have to have enterprises that are competitive to begin to actually take opportunities of those markets that are actually opening. And one of the elements then is the standard. And then this is now where SABS comes in. SABS then provides the standards required for the products that we provide, these enterprises are providing. So SABS has got a very strong component of enterprise development, where they are looking in terms of the products that are produced by small enterprises and provide the standards and advice in terms of the standards that are required. Now, how would you, as you said, like the committee to assist in this work? I think the very same fact that we are presenting in front of this committee is because the advices, the questions that are coming out of this committee keeps us on toes all the time to say, are we making it? Are we making inroads in terms of the work that we are doing? And the advices that we're giving from time to time for us, it's actually enhancing our work. And more than that, also, your involvement in some of the activities. I remember when we were dealing with the launch of the CEDA call center, wherein the call center will address the issue of the late payment of small enterprises. I said to CEDA, first thing that we need to do, the launch is going to be on the 21st. First thing that we need to do, also extend the invitation to the committee. Because the committee needs to know exactly what we're doing and need to also to harness our work and need also to give us advice from time to time. So, Chair, that invite is actually, I think it's in Saroch, should be in Saroch's PC by now, because I really suggested that it's supposed to happen. In terms of cooperatives, well, there are a number of cooperatives, issues that the cooperatives unit is doing, but I'm informed that a cooperative unit will be presenting on the 18th. And so I don't want to preempt what is it that they're going to be presenting on the 18th. Lest I begin to say there's something else, there's no infrastructure, as you said. But I would.
No, I think when we look at cooperatives, we are looking at it from the point of view of cancer. So I do need, we do need the information. And additionally, if you could also give us five of them where cancer has progressively intervened. In other words, where cancer says, out of these five in the whole country, we can pride ourselves and say our intervention has assisted.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair question. Honourable Williams? Sorry, just connected here.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to find out whether or not this college is catering for cooperatives as well, because to teach business skills is different when you're dealing with cooperatives than when you're dealing with profit-making organizations. When I say profit-making, I mean with just a few owners. And if that college is dealing with that too, or is it just dealing with small businesses that have one or two owners? Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you very much. If I, you would try and respond, Acting Chief Director.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me take those questions that deal with cooperatives then. You raised the issue of the infrastructure, in terms of what infrastructure that the council. As I said, the council work, and I will keep on emphasizing, is actually only to advise. And one of the advice that is given is that there is no infrastructure for business development across. I alluded to that. And we agree with them, and because we said one of the things that we don't have in the country is a very, and I would say it clearly, affordable infrastructure. Because infrastructure is there. You have the malls coming up, you have the business centers coming up, you have all these shopping centers coming up. But affordable infrastructure that SMEs or small enterprises can afford is quite an issue, and they've raised that. But for them, they were raising that as a way of saying, we advising the minister to look at this question of the infrastructure. Now, what we are doing, as I said, one of the solutions that we are looking at, and that emanated during the visit by the Deputy Minister to the provinces, is to look at one, government buildings that are actually idling, not actually being utilized. What is it that we can do there? Two, the infrastructure in terms of the businesses that used to exist prior to 1994. The border industries, the industries that were established in Mabatu in Northwest, where you have this infrastructure is no longer working. Business, you used to have business hives in certain areas. This infrastructure is no longer working. What we need to look at is to say, how do we utilize this infrastructure together working with the public works to make sure that we utilize it. So it's something that we are working on as the DTI to action that advice. And I won't really mention five cooperatives that the council might have interacted with, and because by its nature they interact with everybody. They might have interacted, I wouldn't know for sure, because they might not have reported to me that they have interacted with whoever. But in terms of the stakeholder consultation that they have, they might have interacted with cooperatives, but they're interacting with small businesses across. And these small businesses are the ones that are raising these questions that I've talked about. But really, I'll apologize that I don't have in mind now five cooperatives that I can say. Yes. That we can actually deal with the places. Yes. Now, the college, in terms of whether the college is dealing with cooperatives, yes. Very much so. When I was talking about the Small Business Act, the definition, I said the definition includes also cooperative enterprises. Now, by that technical association, CEDA has a component, a cooperative unit within it that manages the cooperative. And therefore, even in that college, then cooperatives, in terms of the skills that are provided, is also going to be provided in that college. So let me just put it, say, activities of cooperatives also are embedded within the field of activities as well. Is it not possible to utilize the support for training for small business by tertiary institutions? Yes, we have a good relationship with tertiary institutions. If you remember or you recall, we have what you call centers of entrepreneurship in the tertiary institutions. And I'll tell you which ones we are working with. We are working with University of Johannesburg. It has that center established in Soweto, and it's doing quite a good work, because the businesses in Soweto now have found home to begin to get services provided within that center. It's run by Mr. Mazwaya. I think you know Mr. Mazwaya. We have one in VET as well, run by Professor Mube. It's supported by DTI, even in terms of funding. We also funding the component of that center. And therefore, these centers basically, they give us information, but they provide training as well for the enterprises and information, quality information that is needed. And this is what we've been saying over the years, that we can never do it alone as government. We have to pull together these resources that are coming from these entities. We have it also at Fort Hare, and then we have it also at Swan Investment of Technology. Those are the ones that we are working with. There are other universities that actually have highlighted the need to have, for instance, like University of Natal, the need to have such center, because they've seen actually the need to have that component in those centers. And wherein we find that there's a need to support, we even, as I said, funding, giving even particular funding for those activities. And then to the questions that were raised by the chair in terms of the independence and the void, need to fill the void. I raised the issue about the council fills the void between the existing bodies and the minister. So what clearly I was saying there is that you have these number of forums. You have the chamber movement. You have BUSA. You have all these sector associations. There are a number of them, but they don't really, from time to time, accept the department or the minister. So you find most of them, they deal with us. You find them dealing with us in the media when we engage in some time.
You know, it became clear from the Bezos or road shows that there was this gap. In fact, vacuum gap was the word. You didn't use the word void. That as a result of that, there was now the emergence of several of these organizations. Now, I'm saying to you, yes, I hear what you're saying. I mean, surely the council should have told us to fill the void. You know, there are these. Now, exactly what are they filling? What void are they filling? You know, what is it that they are doing that you didn't do? Because, as you put it, because during the road show we found that all these other small business organizations had got established to fill this need. What need? Tell us.
I understand it clearly now, Chair. And I think maybe it was a question of taking all these questions all and all by myself. I understand it clearly now. Now, in terms of our engagement with the provinces, for instance, once we engage Gauteng to say, but if the Act, National Small Business Act, says you establish CEDA to spread its infrastructure across the country, why then do you have Enterprise Propeller? Now, in Limpopo, for instance, why do we have LIPSA? Now, our engagement with them was that at the time that they have a particular need to support small enterprises. But they feel that the national agencies are not really closing that gap within their localities, which was a fair analysis of activities that were happening on the ground. And therefore, ours is to say then, how do we address that? And you're saying, how is the council addressing that? The council have identified that as a need to begin to integrate all these things. Not only the council, even our political heads, because within the MINMEC have actually adopted what we call coordination system, wherein we say, let's better coordinate our activities. If Enterprise Propeller is already there, unfortunately there's nothing we can do about it, but how do we make sure that Enterprise Propeller provide quality services that were to be provided by CEDA? This is what we're doing. And where enterprise for Pella is existing, for instance, in Gauteng, we're not going to plug cedar in there. Because the services are provided and the money that is coming from government. So we can't plug cedar there. Hence, currently, you see, the only office that we have, which is just advising enterprises in terms of where to go to get services, is cedar in Gauteng, is in Pretoria. Only having only one cedar office. Because enterprise propeller is spread across. So this is what the void that we are, how we close the void. Okay, in terms of the multiple organizations that the council might have met, well, they've met with a number of organizations. They've met with universities. They've met with the research institutions, for instance. They've met with the HSRC, for instance. They've met with a number of people. Because, as I said, theirs is to meet with a number of people, or players and researchers, analysts on the ground. Because once they get that information on the ground, they are able to analyze to say, hang on, DTI, are you saying you're actually making an inroad in this area? But in terms of the information that we're getting on the ground, nothing is happening. And then assist in this area so that they advise us, because, as I said, this body should actually have a helicopter view to us to say, zoom in this area. This area has got a gap. There's an area where I said strategies to address, council must advise the minister on the strategies to address the identified market failures affecting the sector.
Now this is going to stop because I think it's going to be useful for us if we get that in writing. And as you know what you said to me when you came into the committee, Mr. Mahoto, you said there's a report which this council, before it, as it were, in terms of its reference terms and the legislation, had to, that's no longer in existence, is that right? Yeah. Now, I just want to address that. So, now, I think, have you got that full report handy?
I don't have it here.
No, but how thick is it? And is it about that big?
No,
now, what's it, 100 pages, 200?
No,
right. Now, if you make that available to us through the right channels, we want to get that report into the hands of this committee, and then it's going to address that. Personally, I think you've done an excellent attempt at presenting the work of the acting DDG, is it Mr. Sipho Sigodo,
yes,
who should have been here. Why did you say he couldn't be here?
There's a meeting of the economic cluster where he was supposed to present with CEDA. And also, they are also, as you know, the department has been struggling with the issue of the vacant positions. So also, they are actually trying to address that issue in terms of interviewing a lot, whole lot of other. Because almost, not almost, but a number of people are acting in DTI. So we have to, they have to close that. In terms of the DBSA regulations, they have to make sure that they close that gap. So that's what actually is actually holding him in the office.
Well,
I must say it's good to know you're not going to set up a theatrical organization. Now, let's, on this issue then, there was only one concern. I know that when we heard that this council was no longer in existence, we did indicate it may be good idea if DTI itself, you know, the is it Enterprise and Development Division, was able to address us. And it would have been perhaps some, now that I think of it, if we had known about the apology a little bit earlier than, say, Monday. I'm not sure when we did get that apology. Was it now or was it Monday? Because I don't remember seeing the apology. I only heard it now. because what did happen, there were quite a few members who we have on our schedule listed as members of DTI or COTI or other such institutions that we would like to engage with, and some of them requested, sometimes through Siraj, sometimes through the minister and others, could we change that date? But regrettably, we got no such indication from Enterprise Development Division. You know, I do not want you to answer for someone else. I think he must account for himself. So, notwithstanding that he's probably got his hands full, let him tell us this, exactly what you've told us, you see? And I don't think anyone should be put into the position of defending superiors, ever. It's a very difficult position to be in. And then, you know, but on his behalf, you've certainly been able to explain a number of issues, and I'm glad you did this before we got the thick report. But let's get that thick report, okay. Just, there may be a few outstanding clarifications before you leave, and let's just see if there are. On my left, we have Honourable Van der Westhuizen and Honourable Marais.
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't hear the reaction to the budget of this council, how much money was spent on it. That's our first follow-up. If you could tell me that, I would appreciate that. And then secondly, I don't quite understand, this is a panel of small business experts. So in a sense, why must they then still go and consult and go around the whole country consulting small businesses if they are experts? I mean, a layperson like myself could learn a lot from going around the country speaking to these people, but doesn't it reflect on themselves that they are not such a panel of experts and they now need to go on these road trips?
To become experts.
To become experts, to be able to serve on the council. It's a hen egg, chicken and egg sort of situation.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to point out that on that one slide where it says common challenges faced by SMMEs, skills and knowledge was not one of them. So that is why I've identified that you don't think that is a problem and a challenge and a need within. So either this is not completed or, you know, we are correct that you don't see that as a priority. Thank you.
Have you got that budget on your fingertips there, Mr. Mahoto, or is it in this report?
Yes, Chair. I must point it out that by its nature, the budget is managed by the Secretariat, which happened to be DTI. So it's money that is not necessarily saying is the council, is ring-fenced for the council, but it's not separate from the unit budget. But it's about 3.5 million per annum.
I don't know if that answers your question, Honourable Van der Westhuizen. I assume a lot more is going to be in this report.
Thank you, ma'am. If it's 3.5 per annum,
if it's 3.5 per annum, it translates to me to just over 10 million rand that's been spent in the previous 3 years. And for 10 million rand, I would love to see the output or the impact or what they've achieved. And I must say, I have not heard today that the 10 million rand has been spent well and that, you know, it's been an injection to that of that magnitude to small business. And I would really want to encourage the presenter to share that with us today, because otherwise, as I've said, I'm going to have to leave this meeting today and say, well, another 10 million for our monitor of you know, fruitless spending. Thank you.
I think you know, Mr. Mahoto, you must really appreciate the concern of the committee. I know that this is the fourth term and the current political leadership has only been there a few months, and as I say, you were left with a lot of acting positions, or many vacuums, holes, and this organogram and this sort of thing. But we have a real concern that now what are we going to get to grips with? You know, this is, it's 10 million, and for 10 million, what has been the output? I think you hear what has been said here, you know, and it's a very serious matter of concern. This, and the mere fact that this council just coming and going 10 million later, it didn't even manage to say goodbye to us, it's gone with the money it spent running around the countryside. Wonder which sort of country inns they visited. Must have been some pleasant ones that they kept on going. But just to see if you can tell us about the outputs. Yeah, you see, I think it's a point here, outputs and outcomes.
Chair, the output, as I said, I think when I that last slide, when I was saying, as you come and hit the ground as a council, there were a number of things and systems that were not in place. The council didn't really hit the ground running. There were no guidelines. They had to know exactly in terms of how, because advisory is not only to draft a piece of paper and just say we're advising the minister. Advisory, it has to actually to be in the same, in a particular format so that it can actually feed into the policy. So a number of things that the system that they had to put in place, but the benchmarking in terms of saying, because we are not an island as a country, therefore we have to work and understanding exactly what is happening in other countries. Now, benchmarking was one of the key areas that the council was actually looking at. For instance, to see if the work of the DTI or the work of the country around enterprise development, is it in par in terms of our sister organization? For instance, we're working very close with Brazil, India, around what we call IPSA. Now, IPSA is a body wherein we actually interact with these three countries to understand exactly in each country what is it that we can get as experiences to feed to each other. Now, within that IPSA work, the council moved quite a number of times to meet with our India counterparts, to meet with our Brazil counterparts, also to attend what we call IPSA High Nation Conference, to actually get this information. And this goes to the question where it was raised to say, when they are council of experts, why are they running around consulting? It's because even if you are an expert, but you need to get a second opinion, because you can't say, you know, what I know might not be known by the second person, especially people on the ground, because we might be an expert, and this is what has been the problem, the bottom-up or the top-down approach where we say we understand issues of small businesses. We can deal with issues of small businesses. But when you go on the ground, you find out that you understand nothing in terms of the challenges that these small enterprises are facing on the ground. Now, the purpose of going on the ground provincially and otherwise and understanding exactly was to say, as an expert, where I'm sitting, this is what I see and this is what I know. But do these people know what I see on the ground? So you've got to actually harness it so that when you feed into the information, because it has to feed as an information that comes from the experts, also confirmed by what is happening on the ground. Hence these visits. And in terms of the output, as I said, I think one of the outputs, and I'll also keep on emphasizing that the output of the council, it's not only something that you see on the paper. The output of the council is what to translate into action. And the translation into action is, unfortunately, is not the council, it's the DTI. They need to give us a report, they need to give us advice, and then we need to translate that into action as the DTI. Because that, as I said, the information that they give us is a feeder to our strategy. Remember, the council by its nature, it's an ad hoc structure. Hence, in terms of the guidelines, they have to meet only 4 times in a year. It's
okay.
A very ad hoc.
I'm going to stop you there.
I think it's an advisory body, as you say. And as an advisory council, we're going to have to get a lot more just in writing. I'm not going to delay you, Mr. Mahoto, but let me say one thing to you, which we will put in writing to the minister and the acting DDG, that we're going to need a written response to some of our queries. I think you've done as good a job as any person could have done who was asked to come and fill in for someone else at short notice. And I think for that we ought to thank you. And also for being on your own, I don't think that's a position that anyone wants to be in. One likes to be with colleagues as well, to support you and assist you where possible. But the only thing that does worry me, we spend 10 million running around our own country, and now we're going to start running overseas. I ask myself, I never saw too many Brazilians running across here to find out what was happening. Maybe they knew that was the problem. And then I don't know if they went to Vietnam or they went anywhere else to have a look how things were being done. But they seemed to do it once they knew what their problem was. They had a look. And they said, as Brazilians, this is what we ought to be doing. And the Indians did the same thing in India. They never rushed to America or anywhere else. They said, this is India. See what the problem is? Think this is how we ought to fix it. Now, they may be wrong. But the thing I am saying to the DDG of Enterprise Development, that's it here, making Enterprise Development Division, tell you he's got a lot of analysis, people who can analyze. As you say, these are these experts at analysis. Now, let them analyze these visits around the countryside, and let's develop our own responses to this, and tell him that what we will do is to put our own issues in writing and request a written response. We will also be, of course, communicating with the DG, with whom we are developing a very sound relationship, and the minister, and request not to be given any more surprises. When we're going to request people to come, we learn of their demise. Next time we won't want to issue an invitation in case we're burying them. You know, so it puts us on a back foot on these issues. All right. I mean, we'd be too afraid to do it any longer. Let's see who's on the point of sharing the fate of enterprise of this organization, the advisory body, how many of them are there? And just, I think, inform your DDG that we appreciate he's got a lot on his plate, as do the members of this committee as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps we must speak afterwards, but I don't know, you must advise. But if that has been the output of the committee, then
the
I've got
council.
Serious council, then I've got serious
I want to address this within committee
now, you see. I think we want to release Mr. Mahoto, and then we'll be putting this in writing, you see, Honourable Van der Vestes, and I don't think you hold an isolated opinion. So, but this is why I say let us release Mr. Mahoto. Okay, catch a plane back to assist the DDG there. Right. And then I know that Siraj will be with us as the liaison. Okay, thank you. Now, among ourselves then, I think that I don't want to not pass the minutes today, but I am concerned about a number of the issues that have come up. How many minutes are there for us to pass, Andre? Are there 5 or 10? We've all read them, so they should take us no longer than 2 minutes each, 12 minutes. In that case, let's just complete our points on this. I'm suggesting that we respond in writing, you see? I mean, because we're all, I can just see the looks around when, and it's, people are not happy. No one here is saying that we feel that this council has done an effective job. Am I hearing this? Right. Having said that, let's be constructive now. And what is it now? Andre is here, our committee secretary. What is it that we want to put? I'm just going to go down on my left and on my right, in that order, starting with yourself, Mr. Van der Veste.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you read me quite correctly. I have serious concerns about councils that exist only to serve their own interests and that are not fulfilling what they actually should be doing. If the council's purpose was to advise the minister, surely we could have gotten, you know, 20, 50 sentences describing to us what advice they've given to the minister. And with all due respect, advice to say that, you know, the effectiveness of imbezus and so on should be investigated, please, you don't need to be an expert on small enterprise development to give that. Or to advise the minister on how to improve your own functionality and independence, again, it doesn't make sense to me. Or to advise, because that's what it says there. The council recommended meeting its budgetary requirements in order for it to function properly. The lack of integration, cooperation of all these structures is a concern to us as well. And I'm no small business expert. Or the need for further relief and trying to make that tax, grants and aid and so on, more to simplify that. To try the simplifying the procurement of procurement procedures, complicated tender forms. Surely, you know, the minister don't need a council to tell him that. I would have done that for free. And as a matter of fact, I think between us, we can come up with a much longer list than that. And therefore, I think that the minister, being the chair of this council, must be held responsible for the lack of output.
Honourable Rabin. Honourable Marais.
Madam Chair, I think all of us have said so many things that clearly indicate to me that either this structure doesn't work, has been totally ineffective, or it's total disrespect for us as a committee. But you cannot come with a report like that and report and think that we must be happy and be satisfied with what they have done. Clearly, their vision is in the wrong place. Clearly, in my opinion, they don't understand the challenges that South Africa are facing with in terms of job creation, sustainability, growing the economy, at the lowest possible level, at an informal level, and how we must assist those people. It's actually incredibly disappointing. In one way, it is very good, at least to identify and to communicate with them and say, you know, we are not happy. Either you have to, you know, get your ducks in a row, or we will make a recommendation in that regard. But it's absolutely unsatisfactory, and my good opinion of DDI gets damaged, unfortunately, by feedback like this. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Moran. Yes, Honourable Kumalo.
Thanks, Chairperson. No, I think we are having the same opinion with regard to the council and functioning of it itself. I mean, we have been told that the term of office is expired, and currently there is no one who is executing the duties of the same council, which confirms that it doesn't have the effectiveness. So I think we are in an agreement. Secondly, Chairperson, when you're sitting and listening and also looking at the slides that were shown here, on the strategic objectives, there is a slide that says they'll be contributing towards empowering the women, youth, and that to me shows that so far they haven't done anything with regard to this, unless maybe the report that we're expecting will be containing something that will indicate that they have done so far. Otherwise, the whole presentation is most questionable as to how it was done without the report containing the tangible thing. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think as the oversight practitioners, we're supposed to hear straight from the minister together with this country, not somebody who's just speaking on their behalf. I think it would be relevant if the minister was here together with the country, as the chairperson of the council, so that we can be able to just to ask directly whether he is or she is getting value for money with this council, instead of I think we are barking at the wrong tree. Maybe let's have the minister and the council just sitting with us there.
Honourable William.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the point was made that they want to change the legislation in order to make it easier to convene these meetings of the council, and we should be very sceptical about that, because changing the legislation and removing the minister as the chairperson will make the council more independent and even more less accountable to the minister and to this committee. And they'll probably spend 50 million rand on travelling around the world looking at how other people do it if they don't have at least somebody in charge who, that's it.
I think it is a matter of concern. I looked here, and in one of the slides here, where they talk about the small business, etc., it made it very clear. I don't have the same numbering, but I have the same slides. It talks about common strategy priority areas for small enterprises, from creating a culture, etc. And on that slide, it says here, creation of an enabling environment for enterprise growth and development of small enterprises and co-ops. But you know, their knowledge of the co-ops and the sort of thing seem to be somewhat limited, and yet it's one of their strategic, as it were, areas in this regard. The other thing you see, which for me, when I looked up at the Establishment Act of this, it talks here on another slide of how they were established or how they should be, and I think Honourable Labenya was referring to a lot of that. He indicated that there were no effective guidelines and so on, and framework and that kind of thing. But this seems to have come out of the Small Business, National Small Business Act, and that the minister himself would be developing a process whereby this organization could actually be established. In keeping with the Small Business Act of 2003, the minister would be establishing this. And their job would be to represent and promote the interest of small business as contemplated, and this is where I think we ought to get out this legislation ourselves now and ask our researcher, the National Strategy for the Development and Promotion of Small Business in South Africa, to drag that out so that we can see exactly what the intentions were there in the Integrated Small Business Development Strategy as approved by Cabinet in 2005. So you're looking at something that's effectively been in operation since 2003, but which got the strategy in 2005, 2 years later. You know, I'm just trying to look at the pertinent point. So now, 5 years after that, or 4 years after that, having spent in 3 years 10 million, the experts went around the country, etc. Now, I think one of the issues we need to convey to them that we have, we are concerned about is, first of all, do we believe we need an advisory council, you see? And I think, I don't want us just to make a snap decision here. I don't think that's the way we should operate. I think we need to deliberate and apply our minds on this matter. But I think that's one of the issues. Do we need an advisory council? And no doubt in that legislation it's going to explain why we need it. That's why I say we need the legislation. So I want to make a proposal which we need to convey to them, to the ministry and the department, that this is what we're going to do. We ourselves are going to study this legislation. Having studied it, we're going to then come back to them with what we believe should be in operation and how it should be in operation. And if that is what the whole committee believes the route we should operate on, then let's go ahead and convey that. But then secondly, we need to indicate in writing that we would not like what occurred here this morning to establish a precedent for our engagement with the ministry and with the department. Three, that if there is a problem next time in meeting with this committee, we need the reasons in writing, and then we can make a decision as to whether they are acceptable or not. That we don't like to be faced with a fait accompli. I got on a plane, I'm here, and that's it, issue. Thirdly, we would like to be kept informed. We would like to be informed of the status, the current status of every entity in this department or linked to this department, council or otherwise. We'd like to know of the status of their term of office, in particular the expiry date of the body and the chairperson, and under which legislation they were established or exist. It's going to be very difficult for us to operate unless we have that information.
The expiry date of the chairperson's term of office,
yeah.
I don't think the minister knows how long he still will be the minister.
With the exception of any entities on which you yourself have the private chairperson or hold the function of chairperson. Obviously, you know, these things are so political, then I'm just never sure of anyone's physical life, let alone their political life. So, let's not enter that realm. Yes, I'm going to go with you.
Thank you, Chair. I think that we should be more specific. We shouldn't say entities or,
agencies.
You should say anybody that falls under vote 32. Because some people might slip through and say, no, we're not an agency, we're not an entity, but we are spending 200 million rand a year, or whatever. Yeah.
Okay, I think that makes it clear. Yeah. Specifically, what? Well, I think all we're trying to ensure, and just off the record, you can tell them from me, you're not accountable to us. But don't let them ever tell us that it's in your computer again. Otherwise we have to now put in your computer here and set it up and see what it is and then we go to our counselor. Yes.
Sorry, Chair, I'm thinking loudly. I'm thinking about the the ward development, I mean the ward committee and the councillor, where the councillor becomes the ward councillor becomes the chair of the ward committee. And the ward committee is supposed to advise the council about the development, I mean the activities of the ward. Maybe this thing came from that thinking that the minister becomes the chair of this council and this council is to advise the minister. I think maybe it is copied from that thinking and maybe
that's my thinking.
No, it is. I think that's why I said there may be many other little pieces, clauses there. That one was very obvious because it was referred to here. But I'm sure if we asked Honourable Labenye if she knows of another clause there, she would say no, because she hasn't read it. You know, I'm just making an assumption on it, Honourable Labenye. So I think it would be advisable for us first to look at the law, ask our researcher to look at it as well. Okay, can we leave it there for the moment? We do want to leave ourselves 15 minutes for the minute. Yes, Honourable.
May I put it in that I stepped out?
No.
I'm not sure how the minister himself fits into this, because I would have thought that before we make decisive decisions,
No, we haven't taken any.
No, then I'm
here. We were telling them all that we will have to do. Get the legislation. These are our concerns. But you see, it's like the acting chief director may even have it wrong for all we know. But he says the minister's chairing. That's why we say let's get this legislation out ourselves. Let's look at it. And having studied it, we'll come back.
And
I think that's fair.
Yeah, and then we can interact even with the minister.
Yeah, because we started off by saying that, look, we've established these good relationships. So we want to continue in that way. So that's the danger of sending someone much lower down, you see, who may not have all of the answers, not the answers, but the facts. You know, he's not... I'm sure the minister wouldn't have told us it's on your PC, for example. You know. These are genuine mistakes on the part of a junior person. Yeah.
Underwriting our ability.
So I want you to say that we want 15 minutes for the minutes. I'm sure we all do. And just before that, you need to know that this lotteries issue is coming up. I'm not sure when it is, but you know were informed that the chairperson of the lottery board would need to be, you know, term of office is coming to an end, and it is our job to interview the shortlisting, the minister would have advertised, and so on and so forth, and that this is coming up. What we do want is to make this quite an important press engagement as well, because... you know, when these the criteria, seen as the concerns we've already raised regarding lotteries, are loud and clear, as you know, the other issue is that were the right criteria put down when the current chairperson was identified? I mean, is that one of the reasons why the lotteries board and the distribution agency are not working? So it will be important for us to make clear what we believe as the committee are the most appropriate criteria, you know, for such a person to have, notwithstanding who these people are, you see. So we would want the press involved there. If we are able to identify someone, well and good. If we're not, at least the press know this was the criteria developed. It's not a personal issue. This is a person, we haven't found anyone in this group who fits the criteria. So at this stage, let's not preempt anything. Yes, Honourable Labenye.
Can I just ask a question of clarity? You are saying that it would be wise if the committee could, you know, get the correct criteria before appointing the person. Are you saying that we are going to get an opportunity to see the advert before it is advertised and make inputs to the advert?
It's already been done, you see. That's all been done. We are going to be given a short CVs. Short list.
No, I think it's all CVs.
No, yes, but I mean, we were not getting a short listing.
No. What will happen is that the committee, because in terms of the act, is the department that advertised and placed the ad for the chair position. On receipt of that CV, the department then could table it in Parliament through the speaker for the committee. Then the committee would act as the interviewer appointment. So we will receive all CVs that have been received by the department. And then the committee will then go through this, and then a normal interview process will establish.
Yes.
Can I also find out for clarity,
will we get all the applicants, or was that a separate advert for chairperson? Because I know that, you know, the whole board must be re-established and reappointed.
No, it's just the chairperson at this stage.
And there is a separate ad for that.
Well, it is only an advert for the chairperson at this stage. At this stage.
Yeah, but there was also an ad for the board. Nominations for board.
Yeah. The process in terms of the chairperson has to go through through Parliament, but not the board process.
Was there a separate ad?
Yes, there was a separate ad. Yes, for the chairperson and a separate ad for the board.
Yes.
Thank you. Chairperson, can I just ask that we are given the relevant legislation regarding the duties of the board? Because obviously, if you know what the person must be doing, you will be looking for those attributes in that person. And secondly, I think there will, in all probability, also be some restrictions in law in terms of who is fit to serve. If we can get the relevant articles of the Act beforehand, please.
As you are aware, we did already request from our own advocate, Bedger, following a decision on this committee, exactly what are the powers and functions of the committee in this regard. And only after getting that advice did we then write to the committee minister to say we'll be happy now to receive the CVs, etc., of the applicants. So we are going to get that. The advocate will sit here. But as I said before, when we study that, we may wish ourselves to say, look, you know, you may have a situation with everyone complying with the legislated criteria. Now, what else are you going to look for? You see? And I think we need to, we must make that kind of decision before, not afterwards, to sort of say, oh, I'd like B now, let's see what criteria I can develop to ensure that we can't work back to front. So we develop the criteria before, and then after that do the interviewing. I think that's really what I'm saying. So I'm just saying that so that we get our committee secretary to ensure we have such a session, you know, maybe a 45 minutes or something, or an hour. Is that all right?
It can happen on the first day before we actually look at the CV, develop that set of criteria for what the committee would determine to be the appropriate person. So we, in our program, we can make provision before that before we actually engage on the in regard to CVs, we develop that, and then it's then a clear guideline has been established in terms of the type of person the committee would be deem appropriate for the position as chairperson.
Right. Okay.
How did the advert? Was the advert very specific about what was needed, or was it broad in general? Because if it's specific, you're going to have a serious problem. You know, if it actually says you need a BSc in, I don't know, lotteries or whatever.
Let's ask for that advert to be provided to us rather than speculate. Let's get it. All right. So, and then just someone asked, I think it was Honorable Mendevester, let's get this package of docs, you know, making sure we have it with the legislation, et cetera, et cetera. So we must ensure that we have all of that before this process starts. Is that okay?
Just a question. Would it be appropriate, I'm just thinking in terms of, if we want to establish a criteria for decision, would it be, I don't know, I'm just thinking, should we only bring the CVs to members on after we have developed that
criteria?
Yes,
of course.
And then, and not have access
you
to
can't
the
have
CVs.
It before.
Now, I just want to make clear that that's absolutely.
Now, you can't compromise the position. Absolutely. You know, let's not start off on a back foot, that's what I'm saying. I wish, right.
Okay, now we've got enough time for the minutes.
And I just want people to know, I expect you all to have studied this over 2 weeks. You know, it's bedtime reading sort of thing. And we just now make some snap decisions. And you've got your list of concerns on one side in your own handwriting. All right, let's move. So the minutes are dated the 28th of May. We did say when this first happened, we will never have this happen again. Remember, it's going to, from after this, it's going to be a regular every second week. Before we go to constituencies, for example. Right, so let's have the 28th of May. Okay, first thing we need to say is there anyone who was present who is not noted here? That, to me, we must ask at the beginning. You know, we don't need problems later. Having said that, does anyone have a problem with these minutes?
No.
Right, can I have someone to propose the adoption?
Thanks,
Honourable Maria. Someone to second them?
Thanks, Honourable Van der Beek.
Right, 28th of May. Now we've got the 23rd of June. We had several...
17.
Yes, I think there must have been...
No, it should be 17.
I'm not even looking at them as I talk. So there's a mistake in the agenda, is there? Right. Was that agenda adopted? 17th of June. Ah, these were the briefings. Is anyone left off who was present?
I may be making a mistake. I don't know whether I was already a member of the committee or not yet.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and I mean, with the poor African National Congress, there have been so many changes and deployment. I only happen to know of Honourable Mabaso because of the specifics in the situation. Himself and Honourable Turok. But the rest of you better have your diaries open. Right.
So are there any objections to
the issues in the committee? If not, can I have anyone to propose the adoption? Thanks, Honourable Van der Westhuizen.
Can we have anyone to second the minutes of the 17th of June?
Thanks, Honourable Maria. Just as well we have the DA.
We will have the
23rd of June. Now we have another person who was present during that time, Honourable and Julie. Right. Is anyone who was present on the 23rd of June, you know, and their name is not noted, anyone of that nature? By then, Turok was present, is he here? Okay, right. Can we have someone to propose the adoption, please? I should have said any correction.
Yeah.
Thanks, Honourable Mabaso.
No, it's just a typo on 4.1 to effect. And then, but on 4.2, I would be helped because I'm doubtful myself whether caucuses take the double S or whether it remains one S.
Well, you see, a lot of these are American and English dictionaries, and I think then the Weber dictionary, and I don't know what else. What dictionary are you using? The Oxford, Cambridge, or Weber?
But I'm not particular.
No, but you see, because if you're using the Oxford one, then connection is spelt with an X. So because I never ever saw an X here, I thought you were using Cambridge. Well, yes. But you have to then follow the same style for all your spelling.
Send to me, Chaplin. The correction on my name there is F I K L I N E, not F I K E N E. After K is I.
I feel strongly about my own name. Feel, you know, one does at least know how to spell one's own name. And then Parliament, of course, tries to correct your own spelling. But there we are. Right. Okay, so there were a lot of, shall we say, semantic and typo errors and that. But having done that, can we have somebody to propose the adoption? Basu, a proposal. Can we have someone to second? Honourable Lavinia.
The 24th
of June. Now, is there anyone missing under those present who was present? And that's the 24th of June. Basu is here, too often, too late. Right. Okay, so that one's okay. And then, are there any notes about anything here, Honourable Mabasa?
On the second page, Comrade Chair, just a small typo on propose, to give it a D. And then also on 4, whether we're talking of the plural committees or a single committee, because it will then determine whether it stays an R or is, you know, for the end of the, towards the end of the sentence of number 4. Thanks, Colonel Chair.
Really am pleased people have been so, they've studied the documents, you know. When I see corrections of that nature, I know people have read. They really have read. Makes me look at this again myself. Right. Okay. Can we have anyone to... Are there any objections?
Definitely one.
Yes.
Although... That's also a small one. The last of that five to makes to add an S.
The last sentence.
Make it difficult.
Given the fact, that one.
Yeah. Or am I missing something? Yeah. In operation, make it difficult. Makes.
Oh, yes. Makes. Must have done
some technical.
Is it two X or is it one X? You see there, let's just look at
this. Let me read the sentence. Given the fact that the X... Yeah, but I think what we should have said here, no, I think we should have said the principal act. Given the fact that the principal act, I mean, which act are we talking about here? That one. No, the interpretation act.
Yeah, it's the interpretation act as well as the principal act.
Oh, no, then my point falls off.
Would be required before the act. In accordance with the Interpretation Act, regulations would be required before the act. Regulations would be required before the act comes into operation, before the principal act or the amended act. Well, then it's before an act comes into operation. It's any act.
Yeah.
But not every act has regulations.
Yeah.
You see, where I'm just
I don't want to get into legal arguments here, you know. Given the fact that the Act and the amended Act are in operation, makes it difficult.
Because it's a fact.
Yeah, it's a fact. It's because the subject of that verb is single.
Yeah.
You know, now, of course, I'm
getting... Why don't you just write the name of the Act out?
I know. I think, you know what's going to be useful on there? No, you see, look, that's a long time ago.
You can
imagine when historians look at this. If we're hoping they will, Honourable Mabasa, then, you know, your grandchildren, then we hope that they understand what we've done.
Put
all the actual, as if it's your grandchildren reading it, Andre. Right. Can we then have somebody to propose the adoption? Thanks, Honourable Maria. Second. Right, thanks, Honourable Ntuli.
Now, we have the 25th of June.
Right, the 25th. Is there anyone who was present whose name is not here? I'm just looking myself, and I know some of the names. Right. Are there any objections? Any corrections? But let's look at that ourselves yet again, especially after that last run of corrections. You know what I think would have been helpful? I know the agenda is the formal consideration of the budget vote, huh? And therefore this draft report was presumably that.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Committee proceeded to consider. I don't even think we need to proceed next time just to consider the draft, but we'll do that. We deliberated. Yes, Honourable Maria?
Just typing error on 47 of my chairman.
Well, I think it sounds correctly in one place.
Correctly in the Maria.
I've even forgotten myself what the NLDTF tables. What's that? Spell it out. Let's spell this thing out. I think we mustn't use any what do you call these acronyms? that's a very obvious one there. Right there. Small Business Advisory Council. And which one was this we've just dealt with? Briefs the committee on its activities. Why didn't they tell us then that that thing was on the point of giving up the ghost? We could have bought flowers. Okay. Is there anyone to propose the adoption? Thank you, Honourable van der Westhuizen. Anyone to second? Thanks, Honourable Ntuli. Then we thank heavens the 1st of July.
Is there anyone
who was present whose name is not noted? You know, I do expect parties, you know, to also try and keep an eye on their colleagues. Now, presumably we'll only have two sets at a time, but I do think it will be helpful for us to share and support each other, particularly the smaller parties. I know COPE is not here, so it's difficult. I mean, we need to keep a note of that. And who's the other one? PAC, isn't it?
Yes.
PAC. But at least I know, Honourable Lavinia, you and Ariane Ambrosini need to watch that one as well. Okay. All right. Are there any objections or corrections?
the Chief Director, Advanced Manufacturing Space Affairs. Was it called Advanced?
I
never remember something called Advanced, really.
Isn't Advanced to the D?
What was that?
The chief to the D at the end, Advanced.
I'm just quickly looking at this myself. Honorable Majaja proceeded. Oh, this was on the space, wasn't it?
Space,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And then the fellow was there, the specialist. Has he noted here?
This is the first meeting.
Oh, the very first one.
It's not the one that we had last week. And
No. That other fellow was there. He was sitting next to her. Yes, but so was that fellow from the, don't you remember? And then he started to talk a lot of scientific jargon when we asked a political question.
Advocate.
Well, I don't know, somewhere along the line he learned some science. But you never mind the fact that he's an advocate. All right. Are there any objections? No. Can we have someone to propose the adoption, please?
I do.
Right. Honourable Mabaso, propose. Seconded by Honourable Ntuli. Right. Next lot. The very last was on the 12th of August. Is there anybody who was present whose name is not noted? Yes, Honourable Levin.
I'm sure I sent an apology for this one. Yes.
In fact, you always do if you're not present.
Thank you.
I should also say apologies, eh?
Mm.
Yeah. No, please, can that be noted? It could have been that I never read it out, and I think people must just remind me when I say we've got two apologies to read it out for the future. All right. I think there's someone I noticed here, but it could have been another in Thule.
No,
and I'm just
no, but I'm not Miss.
And that's what, yeah.
No.
You see, because it's Mr., isn't it? No. Or was there another in Thule who's not related to our in Thule?
Yes. Is she also that?
Yeah.
Is her name Zodwa?
Yeah.
Oh, we are both of that. Maybe I prefer to be free.
No, this is not you.
Now, that's why I'm querying that myself.
No,
can we do it to be free?
Yeah.
For Chris.
No, we lost the Z.
We need to officially use the official.
The official.
No, they are both official, but I prefer Chris.
No, but I mean, which is the one that you came into Parliament with, sworn in first? Is it C or Z?
It's Z.
ZC. Yeah. You can say ZC.
We can say put ZC.
I mean,
but I prefer, I know.
I can't be
saying. Yeah, you know, I'm saying, that.
No, Chair, I do know that.
It's a Zulu name from my father. This one, that one. In our culture, a man is not called by the name which was named by his father. So, it prefers a second one, which is a Christian name. That is our culture as Zulus.
Well, I tell you what, you know,
I do hear what you're saying. The difficulty that the secretary's going to have is that they'll go back to your, ID. And he's not allowed to change what Parliament has given him. But what we can do is to put ZC.
Yeah.
You know, because I also put both my initials,
sure.
JL.
Sure.
And I think that's perfectly understandable.
Sure.
Perfectly. And if, let's just do that. Then there's SJ, Jikalana, Enard Mabetla. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that may have been one of the last committees he was a member of. And then this
came is when we got some of the newer members. You remember the ANC? But there we are. Okay, let's just proceed to page 2 because we want to finish this. Gambling Amendment Act, no 10 of yes, Comrade Mabasa.
On corrections, correct chair, on page, just on number 5 under resolutions, at the end, the fourth word from the end expressed this, to put it in the past tense.
Something I had on this page in my urn, but it was further up. It should be the said. Yeah, yes, Honourable Member Vestover.
Yeah.
Some clarity as to the grammar in which our minutes should be written, and also whether the committee is in the singular or the plural.
Should be in the plural singular. Meaning it never has an S, but it's because although we are groups, collective noun singular.
Yes. But I just to pick up some inconsistency.
Right.
For me, that's the worst that you can do. Either, you know,
no,
stick to what you have.
It's treated as the singular. So the committee is expected, not are, is.
Okay.
I'm just using that as a
sentence. I'm just struggling with the committee recognize and then the committee wishes.
The committee recognizes that.
It recognizes that. And then I would, in the third sentence, have said the committee, however, is advised with a D.
Yes.
And so on. But it's not about the content. It's only merely little grammatical corrections.
The other thing here is what I was concerned about. The committee recognized, right, that in terms of the National Gambling Amendment Act 10, that the minister is in house. Just now, where was it? Oh, here, the second paragraph. The committee also wishes to confirm that the minister has duly tabled the said regulations with a T-H-E. And the only other thing was something here. Has taken a position to review the national gambling legislation in its entirety, and during this process would interact with the Department of Trade and Industry. Yes, I'm not sure if we needed to say in this regard, but you know, if you can take it out, it's helpful. I think the simpler we write our minutes, the better. Yes, Honourable Mabasa.
I'm not sure whether we have passed this one, maybe I missed it.
No,
but
no.
On the committee, however, it's advised.
Did we,
on the third paragraph, on number 5?
Oh, yes.
Is it principal or principle?
It's
principal.
Remember,
act.
It's the one who's in a position, who's a principal.
Okay. And then the last one does be to close the inverted commas because we opened them at the beginning. So somewhere to close them.
Otherwise all the cattle will die.
Okay, I think we're all right there. And so, do we have anyone to adopt the minutes, please? Propose adoption. Thanks, Honourable Maria. Seconded by Honourable Van der Westhuizen. Now, I really want to note, for the benefit of this committee's life, that it is not good practice for us to adopt minutes, more than 2 weeks later, unless there is an exceptional reason for that. So I do not want this practice, this to be a precedent for anything. Yes, Honourable Van der
Westhuizen. There are some items that, or decisions that we've taken that have not been attended to yet. Do we have reference to that? What matters are still outstanding? I'm just afraid that things might fall off if we don't you know, carry it over into the next set of minutes or just record it somewhere. Mm. And there have been a few, and I think it would be quite obvious. I don't need to point them out. If we could just get a way of dealing with those things, please.
Just hear from members. Does any other member who wishes
to make a broad statement, and then I'll ask the committee secretary to just respond as his proposal, because he's made a couple of proposals to me. Honourable Maria?
What I've picked up is in our report that we sent to Parliament that was adopted was not only the issue on the National Lotteries Board, but it was also on the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act, where we said it doesn't impact on a broad base. Initially, it was, I think, on the committee program for somewhere in November. I think the last program that I've seen is nothing on the program for that anymore. It seems like it has disappeared from the radar. Clarity on that.
Honourable Maria, I think you've got a good point. It should be here. You're listening, aren't you, Andre? Because we can't let these things slide. Okay. I'm sure that wasn't a joke, but yes, Honourable Mabasa.
Colleague Chair, this one is not on the same subject, but sensing that we are going towards closure, I also thought I should correct something on the name, but it's not the fault of the committee. So the committee, it's my fault. It has been corrected with Parliament.
Okay.
It should be an A at the end of the surname.
An A.
Instead of an open O. So even on the ID, it's an A.
No, I think let's make sure all the names are correctly spelt in the first instance. That is very, very important. But just in terms of some of the points, let me allow you first to respond, Andre, and rather briefly, because our guest is waiting for us.
With regard to Mr. van der Westhuizen's an issue, we actually yesterday discussed this between Lwazi and Margot and myself, because there are some issues that are raised during a meeting, which is not decisions that are taken by the committee, but it's important for the committee to take cognizance of.
Yeah.
What we've discussed is that as a content advisor, Margot will prepare after each meeting a two-pager of the major issues that has arisen at the meeting, that is not that you don't require 2 minutes, but it is there, so members will probably get in the future a copy of that general discussion of the salient points that we should always keep in mind as a committee of what was discussed and what was responded to. So if we in future have the advisory council, we will know these were the responses to those particular questions, or these were the salient issues that came out from that meeting. So, it's not captured in minutes, but it is a content little document that will form part of the attachment to the minutes.
Right. Honourable Van der Westhuizen.
Thank you very much for that. I like the idea. What you envisage, like a decision register, before all the decisions taken, and then perhaps with a column on the right hand side to say we've already dealt with it, it's finished. For example, some of the things that we've initially identified, for example, the space object, it is a closed subject.
Any decision the committee makes must be minutes.
We'll be in the minutes.
No. That then becomes a legal process. So this sort of quick draft two-pager is not just the decisions. Decisions must be reflected
in the
minutes. But it's other issues that may come up, and that kind of thing that would be here.
Mm.
But just in terms of the style, I know Parliament has its own historical style, which probably dates back to Westminster. And, I'm not sure why these sort of things are cast in concrete. So we'll have to take the sort of thing up as to why they can't be amended, in a period of now 16 years of a democracy. So things such as, especially when issues are being debated, etc., not so much that X said this, Y said the next thing, that's not what we're looking for.
But the following positions were noted or expressed. The decision was, after deliberation, the committee's decision is. Or, you know what I mean? But it may be useful sometimes to note the different positions that came out of this, you know, because 2 years down the line we would have forgotten. Had someone done this with the gambling, we wouldn't be facing the dilemma we're in. Yeah.
Just on that is essentially what the purpose of the content doc will be.
Yeah.
To capture
right.
That. But it's not the decision that was taken, but to capture that view right. That were expressed by members and different views that were expressed. On the issue of the falling off of some of the stuff, I think we've developed a program until and didn't give it to members until the end of March, which will include, if it maybe fell off the thingy now, it will be within the next, for the end of the financial year, it will be back on the thingy, because there might have been, I can't recall why it fell off, because there will be a valid reason for something to be falling off. It does not by or anyone to take it off. But it will be, because we've taken cognizance of the report and what the resolution of the House, basically, and we need to follow up. So our program is aligned to, especially our report on the budget vote. So it will
pick up. All right. The one thing we would like is an a matter of urgency, though, is an analysis of, you know, the reports we've taken, issues that have come up, and tick off those we've addressed and those that are outstanding. Get us a status of this for our next meeting. And then members can immediately say if there's anything overlooked. Is that all right and acceptable? And then when is our next meeting, if we can make that announcement?
The next meeting is for the church.
Yes, Honourable Ntuli.
On top of what you have said, I was thinking that if there are urgent matters, if you can say something like, you know, when we are saying matters arising,
yes.
you just have something at the end, something like that, matters arising, then 1, 2, 3, so that we can be able to track that those issues, things.
That's precisely why we say we want this old Westminster system buried. Okay, now let's just adjourn this particular meeting until the, looks like the 15th, is it? 15th of September, when we're supposed to be addressing the Lotteries Board. Now that particular one is saying 9 o'clock. Even there, I think we must say 9:30.
No, we will distribute a new
so
program.
Please remember what our decision is. If you do see 9 o'clock, please make it 9:30, please. And then, of course, it's in what's the what's GHC? God Hope Chambers. Right, G26, please, G26. And members, we'll see you then. Thank you for being here all the time.
Just a last point, and it's probably just a request from my side. I mean, today we nearly had a situation where not having a quorum. So surely, you know, we must look at, the parties must look at the discipline in that regard as well. You know,
because otherwise we might not also know in the fear that there will anybody not be.
No, look, that happened to the budget committee at one point. People didn't arrive and so on. On this particular occasion we're having a serious problem with illness. You know, we've still got one member in hospital, two others ill, and they've already taken three people off without anything.